Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Don't you?
Oh yeah, it's great. Great for you! Yeah, sure. Everybody loves you. People always love the stupid one. But nobody ever loves the jerk. Everybody hates me.
Now when nobody hates you.
Oh, come on! Let's face the truth! You've been carrying me, I know! I know that! It's you they love! But I need love, too! I just want to be loved and important like you! Is that so wrong?
Oh, my! I know how you can be important, Ren. I know how you can be really important.
Really important? How?
You can be the president of my fan club.
The president? Wow! President! What do you mean you don't agree with me? Do you know who you're dealing with?
It's after the hour of one, and this the month of January, the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and humor-filled studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district here in the glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. What is today, Thursday? It is, in fact, Thursday. Is
oh,
it
yes.
Not?
It's
oh, it's
Thursday.
A Thursday. You can tell because I haven't quite gotten the hang of it yet.
It's just squirrely.
It's 503-505-6964. We would like to join us today and be part of today's cavalcade of amusements with your questions, comments, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature. Whatever it is you might have to share with your fellow man and with Don Taylor and myself. Whatever gifts of abundance and comedy you might wish to bestow upon the rest of humanity. You can do it at 503.
Are we going to get a call from Ralph Johnson today?
You know, we could. Here's the thing. I'm not going to say we are, and in fact, I'm not even going to hope for it, because then if it doesn't happen, it'll be a bitter disappointment.
I just forgot about it until just this moment, and I thought, oh, Ralph Johnson.
Ralph Johnson. I'm just going to say...
The McRib is back.
I'm just going to say that if Ralph Johnson could... If the universe feels that we have been sufficiently entertaining, that we have that we have hewed to the path of righteousness, that if we have been decent and upstanding people, then he will bestow upon us a call from Ralph Johnson. Now, if he feels that we're not deserving of that, or if we have to wait another day, then you know what? Who am I to quarrel with the almighty architect of creation, Don?
And he might have something to do.
He's a busy man.
He might be busy.
St. Pete is a place that's full of excitement.
There's a lot of Ralph Johnsoning to get to.
There's a lot of happenings going on in St. Petersburg. You just, you know, it's a full-time occupation just being a resident of that place, really. You just step out of the house and suddenly you're just awash in, you're awash in potential. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. That's not just the Ralph Johnson hotline, by the way. Although if he keeps calling, we will set one up. We will have a special Ralph Johnson number. Only he will have access to it. Only he'll have the number, and it'll be like sort of, and there'll be like a sort of Get Smart Red telephone on the desk, like the Kremlin line.
And everything will just come screeching to a halt the moment it rings, because we will have an update from Ralph Johnson.
Exactly, and he will be the the first priority, the last priority, and all priorities in between in this program.
You know, considering you know how much we love Ralph Johnson, and we got the call from Ralph Johnson. Our listener Jeff Futzer.
Futzer
spoke to us, and we ended up using his name to coin a new phrase. You'd think that listeners would call in more often.
You would think that we would. Oh, I thought you were going to say that we should use Johnson as a phrase for something, and I was going to say that ship has sailed.
No, I'm thinking that I'm surprised. Maybe I'm not surprised listeners don't call more often now that I think about it.
Why don't they call and be subjected to ridicule more frequently? It's puzzling. Is this just your passive way of getting people to call in and say that they love you? I mean, I can do that. If you'd like, we can just have an entire show of people coming and going, yeah, Rick, you're great, but most of all, it's Dawn that makes my life worthwhile.
I'm not terribly passive about that, really. I would just ask.
Why don't you
and
love
I
me?
Often do. I get really nice emails from listeners, and I'll go home and I'll read them out loud to my husband. And Patrick, listen to this.
You just go home and
say, you're the most awesome thing to ever happen to the Rick Emerson Show ever.
You have a special room in your home
that's
just
love me.
Wallpapered with those, like John Doe and Seven, with just one notebook after another filled with musings about how great you are.
Yes, because I've gotten so many.
I'm just saying.
That I can wallpaper.
No, I mean, I'm just wondering how it is that you choose to remember those special compliments and moments.
I read them out loud to Patrick, and then and he says, well, yes, people love you. And I'm like, yes, they do. You know,
and then I get
this kind of crazy look in my eyes.
Like a long, uncomfortable silence then between you and Patrick, and then one of you says, I'm going to have a TV dinner.
No, then he just says, you know, I almost died. And then and I'm like, yes, you win forever.
Then he just turns back to the huge godlike television screen in the room. Sorry, Don, I have to return to my electronic deity.
Which, by the way, this weekend I have scheduled some time specifically so I can watch Bigger Than Jesus.
Really?
On the gigantic television.
Yeah, that's great. So you can see I think it was still kind of spongy, Rick, at that point, too.
So you can see your huge spongy noggin on my giant 55-inch television.
My gigantic flabtastic form in living color. All right, well, I hope you enjoy it.
And your huge sideburns.
Yeah.
You had enormous sideburns then.
I had sort of, I had like Robert Shaw as Quint sideburns. I was going to say it's a funny story. It's not even really a funny story. It's just a story. You know, the thing about that is that, you know, and I did wear them longer. I had longer, more pronounced sideburns at that point. That was also one of those things, though. Well, you worked in, to nobody's surprise, you were a drama nerd.
Yeah.
Still are, at heart, in here, inside, where it counts.
Once a drama nerd, always a drama nerd.
You can take the girl out of the muslin. I don't know what that doesn't really work, but you know what I'm saying there.
I got the grease paint in my blood.
You can, but it was one of those things where we just, I mean, and you get the, you know, I'm not trying to oversell it. I'm saying it's like we were doing Moulin Rouge or something, but I mean, I think you will get the sense when you watch Bigger Than Jesus, whether you like it or not, I mean, whatever you feel about the actual piece itself, you having done a fair amount of drama work in your life and a fair amount of stagecraft, I think you will get a sense, and you can ask Aaron Duran or Todd the Corpse about this if you'd like to hear more specifics. I think you will get a sense of just like how insane, in retrospect, and I mean this in the best way, and I don't mean to just start off the show by just talking about me or whatever, but I think you will get a sense when you watch that of how insane it was to even have attempted it, much less to have actually done it. I mean, that was the thing where, like, Joni DeRoshi, who directed that, we'd look back at it, and we would just say, like, what? Like, what in the name of God? Like, what? It is that thing where you say, like, if I knew then what I knew now. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't have done it. That if I had known at the outset what it was going to take and how much work it was going to be and how exhausted we would be at the end, I'm not saying I wouldn't have done it, but I am glad that I didn't know. I am so glad that I had no notion going into it exactly how much work that it was going to be. Because you're talking about me, first of all, I mean, it's like over 2 hours long, and it's just me on stage the entire time. And, you know, the idea that I just set out to memorize 2 hours, a two-hour monologue, essentially, that I had to do exactly the same way every night is just sort of that's lunacy in and of itself. And that I was doing it with, because there's me, there's five offstage actors, there is a 16-piece band. And, you know, and by the way, that was all done in a budget of like $9. Also, you know, there was like, you know, me and Joni and Aaron and Todd and the band itself. But the part of it, like, there was no like real production crew beyond that. But of course, none of that ever occurred to us as being an issue at the beginning. Like, fine, it'll be great. No problem. How hard could it be? And it was actually so hard that for about 5 months afterward, nobody involved with that spoke to anybody else who'd been involved with it. And we just tried to forget that the entire thing had happened, I think so.
It's a form that I really admire and that I find just stupefying, really, because something like Storm's Crazy Enough.
Yeah.
I have a friend who lives in Minnesota, and she does... She has all the fringe festivals and stuff, and she does these. I think they're generally about a half an hour long, but her art form is these one person monologue, you know, kind of they're all comedic autobiographical
right.
monologue
sort of
shows.
The freak type thing.
Yeah. And it's completely baffling to me because I really admire that as a form. And it's nothing that I would ever even know where to begin to attempt. I mean, there's a certain number. I have a lot of facility at a lot of things. And I've done stand-up comedy, and I've done theater, and I write. But when it comes to that particular thing, it's something I personally would never attempt because I just find it so daunting.
Yeah, I don't think I ever would have. Well, I mean, first of all, I never would have been able to do it. And this is like the thing when they say, save your applause to the end. I'll save all the rest of my observation about this till after you've seen it, and then because whatever. But I will say that it's not a thing I ever would have been able to do, you know, on my own, certainly. You know, and I don't think anybody really does. Even when it's, you know, when you see like John Leguizamo, you know, and he's just out there, and it really is just truly a one-man show. Because I had like a band, and there's some offstage act. You were like, speaking of Storm, you will get to hear the edible delight of Storm Large playing my mother. So that'll be creepy and hot. Maybe less hot for you. But Leguizamo, you know, has it. He has collaborators, people he works with. And I don't think if I had not been working with Joni and with, you know, Aaron and with the band, we had a guy named Chris Morris, who was the musical director, who there's no way that I ever would have been able to do it. Just handling just my part of it was, I mean, it was, I won't say it was overwhelming, but it is one of those things where you. One of those things, and you've probably have done this too, where you begin a project and you are just, in retrospect, you are so mind-bogglingly naive about what it entails. Where you just think, I'm just standing on stage saying some stuff. Come on, I do that every day. How different could it be? And the answer is, it's like astonishingly different. It's an entirely different thing altogether.
Sure, Rick Emerson, I'll do an internet radio show with you. How complicated could that be?
How much work could that possibly take? It's what, 90 minutes a day? No problem. Pshaw. The only other observation I'll make about this, and to underscore your point, I would say that, you know, so we did Bigger Than Jesus. We actually did three runs of that. We did it at three different venues, and the one you have, the DVD you have, that is actually the final performance of it, where we had like a whole three camera setup, and basically, which we filmed and preserved and whatever, because I think. Because I think at that point there was already like a little red light in the back of my head going, never do this again. And sure enough, I haven't. But the proof that it is so daunting is that I have never attempted to do anything else like that. I mean, that is, I'm not saying I never will again, but it is a thing that is absolutely and completely draining. Which then, when you see a guy like, and what the guy who inspired Bigger Than Jesus was a one man performer named Mike Daisy, and Mike Daisy is a guy who we've had on the show, and I think we're going to try to get him back maybe later this year when he comes through town. But Mike Daisy is this guy who it's pretty much all he does. I mean, he writes magazine pieces and he does little articles, and you know, and he contributes to NPR, I think. But his prime method of His raison d'être, as they say, his primary job is at a monologuist, and he has some set pieces or some shows he's done in the past that he'll bring back every now and again. He became famous with a thing called 21 Dog Years, which is a 90-minute one-man show about being one of the first 15 employees at Amazon. It's called Doing Time, 21 Dog Years Doing Time at Amazon.com, which is actually the thing I saw where it was second only to Leguizamo's Freak. It was the first time I ever saw a guy just come out on stage and just stand there for 90 minutes and tell an autobiographical story, except he actually did it without any sort of, without any music. He did it without any real audience interaction, the way that Leguizamo sometimes has, and it was really just a revelation. And then I realized that guy writes one of those, like, every 6 months. He has another one called the piece he's touring on now is called The Agony and the Ecstasy of Steve Jobs. And it is a simultaneous, and he's hilarious, but he's hilarious, but also in a way that is filled with societal observations and not a little bit of education. And The Agony and the Ecstasy of Steve Jobs is about the rise of Apple Computer, the integration of Apple as a brand into American lifestyle, its effect on the way Americans behave, but also an analysis of the appalling labor conditions under which a lot of Apple products are made, and his sort of struggle with being an Apple enthusiast, and also realizing that there's like some 9-year-old in a sweatshop making your iPhone. And amazingly, he does all of that, again, from scratch about every 6 months, does it all from memory on stage every night, and then manages to be funny the entire time, which is, I mean, and all of those things are just, and it's like you said, when you sit in a room with certain people and you talk to them and you get the sense in the back of your head that, like, you will never, ever be that good at anything, there's no way that I could ever do what that guy does. So I consider myself lucky that I was ever able to just do it once without effing it up, like, too badly. But back to the issue of my hair, which is how this all started. So by the time we actually got to that performance, which is the final night we ever did Bigger Than Jesus, by the time we got to that, we were actually, I think, so, I won't even say panicked. We were just, it was that place where you are just like exhausted and keyed up and stressed out and nervous beyond your capacity to feel any of those things. Like, you are in this state of adrenalized numbness, which I think a lot of performers get if you're, like, I think a lot of bands get that. If they stay on the road for a long time, you get that sort of premature senility where you're just sort of, it's like the road weariness where you just feel like you are fried. I think the burned out is the phrase. You know, people say, well, I get road burn. You know, I get real burned out if I'm out there touring for too long. And it wasn't that bad, but we were sort of at that point. And I think that I had, I had actually been scheduled to get, like, a haircut that day or that morning or the night before. But I think I actually just sat there in a chair backstage after one of the rehearsals, and it was that thing you hear about when people are climbing Mount Everest where they suffer, where they freeze to death, and they get, I forget what the actual clinical name for it is, but it's where there is so little oxygen getting to their brain that they are sitting there at the top of Mount Everest in the death zone thinking to themselves, I gotta stand up. If I don't stand up, I'm gonna freeze to death. Yeah, my toes are going numb right now. I think one of my ears just fell off. I gotta stand up. Why don't I stand up? I really gotta be standing up. God damn, it's cold. I'm on Mount Everest. I'm gonna freeze to death. Why aren't I standing up? And then they just don't, and they just sit there. And I think, if I remember correctly, I sat backstage willing myself to stand up and walk to the car. And it took me like 65 minutes just to get to the point of standing up. And I was never able actually to summon the willpower to walk outside. I was just so completely like beyond myself with exhaustion. And so I think I actually just looked in the mirror and I went, F it. This is how I look. This is how I will be on film forever. Anyway, so enjoy that.
Okay.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Thursday, as if you didn't notice. Geek Watch coming up today. Penis Watch coming up today. Clergy Watch. Mr. Eric D. Snyder joining us from the Sundance Film Festival about 50 minutes from now. Later on, about 45 minutes away, we'll talk to Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon. They're going to join us in the studio to talk about... I guess it's not like a huge... I don't think they're waiting to like to, I don't know, to pull the curtain back and reveal it. So they're going to be doing some work for Trailblazers.tv is the website. So Trailblazers.tv obviously is just it's video content online. It's the Trailblazers' own video channel. And so Sarah and Greg have been doing some stuff there. And I believe I hear tell the word is. I don't think it's started yet. I don't know that there's a timeline for it, but they're going to actually be hosting their own show on Trailblazers.tv. Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon will be doing that, so we'll talk more about that with them. Let's see what else. We got clue number four. We have Thursday's clue for the EH Vending Name That Snack contest. That's coming up later on. Let's see. Also, I got a great story that Dawn doesn't have that I possess right here.
And I have an email I need to read.
Holding it in my hand, so we'll get to that in a second.
Plus, so many things.
I'm going to tell a Harry Potter-based Yo Mama joke in just a second. So that'll be exciting.
Wow, yeah.
Let's see, what else? Oh, and then I have a revelation about one of the appliances in the kitchen. Something that may surprise you. Dawn Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
The Tea Party holds its first meeting today. A woman assaults a police officer with Pine Sol, and bored teens go on a BB gun rampage.
Can you really rampage with a BB gun?
Oh, indeed you can. As we will find out later when I read this story. I believe this really does qualify as a rampage.
It's like just one shade beyond going on a rampage with a dart gun. It doesn't really seem...
And yet, I think a rampage is really about quantity.
All right.
And so I believe this qualifies as a rampage.
All right. Fair enough. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. So here's what I got, Dawn, before we do anything else. We'll get to some news. We got Mr. Eric D. Snyder coming up from Sundance. And do you know, has he seen anything in particular that we want to...
I really don't know. I
feel like I've exhausted all my generic, so what's going on at Sundance? Have you seen Jon Favreau questions?
Well, I was going to ask him. There was a film that screened yesterday called The Oregonian that takes place here in the Pacific Northwest, which I don't know if it was filmed here or if it was filmed in Canada, as these things sometimes are. But it stars Lindsay Pulsiver, the Were-Panther from True Blood.
Okay.
So I was going to ask him if he'd seen that. Also, there was a documentary about Elmo, and I didn't know if he'd seen that or not.
Elmo was in Elmo?
Yeah.
In what sense was there a documentary about Elmo? I mean,
is it
like a pseudo, like...
I'm really not sure what all's involved in it, but there's something. I think it's a behind the scenes on how Sesame Street and the Muppets work.
Oh, so it's not like an in character, like a...
I don't think so.
He was a confabulation of yarn and string, and then one day all of his dreams came true.
Yeah, but there is a really bizarre photo online today of because I guess Elmo is of course there to help promote the movie, and there's a photo of Drew McWeeny with Elmo. Which is something I never thought I would ever say or see.
When this must have happened after I left childhood. When did Elmo become everybody's favorite Muppet and best friend?
Elmo is a fairly recent phenomenon.
He's a polarizing Muppet.
Yeah. He definitely got all of the glory that I think Grover should have had.
Okay, so I'm not hallucinating this. Elmo is a divisive figure, and I know it sounds retarded to talk about a Muppet being divisive, but older people who are like...
We didn't have
25 or 30.
We didn't have Elmo when we were kids. Elmo showed up, I think, in the mid to late 80s. And he was introduced, I think, because they decided there needed to be a Muppet that actually was a child.
He's a toddler, basically. Yeah, he's a 6 or 7 year old,
right.
A Muppet.
So the kids could, I think, relate. They wanted a Muppet that was actually a child. But
I thought Big Bird was a child.
Yeah, well, Big Bird, I think, is just mildly retarded.
Dawn Taylor, who said that, by the way, you kids who are listening out there. Rick Emerson is not saying that Big Bird is retarded.
Yeah, but no, Big Bird is like that really big...
He's Philo.
He's like that... Like I went to school with a kid who was like about a foot taller than everybody else, and his head was really huge, and he had to wear those special shoes.
Just say it. He's Baby Huey.
That's Big Bird.
Wait, is Big Bird male or female?
Big Bird is male.
You sure?
Yeah.
I thought he was voiced by a woman.
I don't.
Well, so is Bobby Hill, I guess.
Yeah,
so, you know.
And so is Bart Simpson. But no, I don't think so. But
not that it matters. I don't know if they've ever...
He's definitely a male character.
Okay. All right. I don't think it's just that we didn't have Elmo growing up. I think there is something.
But Elmo is annoying.
Elmo, you know what Elmo is? Elmo is like an actual child. He's shrill. That's the thing about Elmo.
And he's deliberately cute. He's like aggressively, deliberately cute. And I think that. Cute is something that is earned, not achieved through force of will.
I think that's maybe the thing. I think that the problem I have with Elmo, and if anybody, you know, here's the thing. I was just going to say, and if anybody finds this conversation silly, but, you know, of course, if you're listening, you don't find it silly. So the end. The problem I have with Elmo as a character is, and again, I love the Muppets. I really do. I love the Muppets. I love Sesame Street. I love, you know, and if you go back and you watch some of those now. You know, a lot of it seems dated, but a lot of it seemed dated when I was a kid, because it's all, like, from 1962. You know, you get the cartoons of the guy, the typewriter, like, typing letters on himself and then speeding away. I mean, that was, you know, it's basically like you're watching a kinescope at that point. So it has nothing to do with the fact that I didn't grow up with Elmo. It's that Elmo seems... More than any other Muppet and more than any other Sesame Street character specifically, Elmo seems like something that was dreamed up by the marketing department as a way to sell more crap.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
He, you know, and I'm not saying they don't have merchandise at the others. Clearly they do. I mean, there's a billion things you can buy that have, like, Bert and Ernie on it. But Bert and Ernie, it seemed like they were, the characters were created and then later they merchandised them. Mm-hmm. Elmo seems like a guy who was dreamed up by a focus group or in a lab. And partially, as you said, because they wanted somebody who was a proxy for the children watching, but also because I think they felt they needed somebody who was more overtly marketable and franchisable. You know, that you could, somebody that you could plaster on everything more easily, and that is Elmo.
Yeah. I, on a very personal level, I dislike Elmo for the same reason that I dislike Rush. It's like Geddy Lee's voice.
The artist or the...
The band.
Okay, not the talk show host.
The Geddy Lee's voice and Elmo's voice both. It's like something is just stabbing me in the side of my head.
That's interesting.
There's just a tone to the sound that I just really, really dislike.
I would actually be curious. I would like to impanel a group of adults and a group of children and talk to them separately about Elmo and try to suss out exactly where this disconnect happens. Because... And people think that we're overthinking the issue. You think about it, there is unanimity about Muppets in general. I mean, I can't really. There's nobody dislikes Snuffleupagus. You know, they're sort of liked across the board. Maybe you have a favorite or some you like more than others. But he really is the only divisive Muppet that exists.
Yeah, nobody says, "Wow, that Oscar the Grouch, I can't stand him."
No,
everyone likes Oscar.
So maybe it is the voice, or maybe it is the fact that he has more childlike behaviors. But again, I would view Big Bird as being, but Big Bird has more of a, I would describe Big Bird as having more of a whimsical sensibility. And you know what, here's the thing that Big Bird is. Big Bird is made, he is emotionally and attitudinally, Big Bird is made entirely of wonder.
Yes.
That's his whole thing, is Big Bird is constantly sort of wide-eyed with wonder and curiosity of the world around him. Whereas, and I guess Elmo is too, but is it this? Let me ask you this. Is it possible that we dislike Elmo because unlike Big Bird, we say, entering the 97th minute of conversation about this, is it possible that we dislike Elmo as opposed to Big Bird because Elmo is more like an actual child?
Probably. Quite likely.
So maybe it's not that he's contrived, although he certainly is. He was created by the marketing department, obviously, but is it also that his personality is more like an actual child who's in the room asking you a million questions a second and you just want to go, like, go play. Would you just go outside somewhere, please?
Well, possibly. And also, to me, it's worse because I know it's an adult voicing him.
Right.
And I think if you're a kid, obviously, you're not really thinking of that. But I know that there is an adult voicing Elmo, and I loathe baby talk. Loathe it.
Right.
And so, to me, it's not, his voice is not the sound of a child asking questions. It's the sound of a grown-up
doing baby talk.
This voice. And it just fills me with rage. I just hate that so much.
It's interesting when you know this, that I don't think I'd ever really thought about it in these terms, that there are no other child Muppets. They're all either adults or they're sort of ageless. Because, again, Big Bird is not really... He doesn't really have an age. There are no other Muppets who demonstrably children.
There was Kermit's nephew.
Robin.
And I think occasionally they had brought in, like, for specific things, like on The Muppet Show, there would be, like, baby Muppets. But they weren't ongoing characters.
But they weren't ongoing characters. Even Robin, I think, he was a child, but he was not as young as Elmo.
Right.
I would say that if Robin were a person, he would have been 11 or 12 years old.
And then there was Muppet Babies.
I love Muppet Babies. Don't front on Muppet Babies. Here's the thing. You know who else loves Muppet Babies? Greg Nibbler. So I'm just saying,
Though that there were Muppet Babies.
Well, but they're not part of the accepted. That's
right.
They're not canon.
They're not canon.
They're part of the extended universe, and I think we all know it's true. I said that unironically, by the way.
I know you did. That's why it's extra funny.
Before we go to the news desk and prepare for the call from Eric Snyder, okay, I'll give you the option here.
Mm-hmm.
I can do a Harry Potter Yo Mama joke.
Okay.
I can do fun fact about one of the appliances in the kitchen, or I can give you the headline from this news story.
Well, do you have the Harry Potter music to play while you do the joke?
Do I have the Harry Potter music?
Well, I know you have it there somewhere, but I mean, do you have it? If you have the Harry Potter music available to you at this moment, then I say I want to hear the Harry Potter joke.
All right, let me just drag and drop this. All right. It'll be, we'll go with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra version. Your mama's so fat, she has to apparate in sections.
Oh, God.
All right. I can't take credit for that, by the way. That's not a Rick Emerson original.
I was impressed.
Oh, no, that's not me. I'm not that guy. I would not try to take credit for somebody else's joke. Improbably, or perhaps inevitably, there was a Facebook thread yesterday that I saw consisting of nothing but Harry Potter-themed Your Mama jokes. Would you like to hear two more?
Oh, yes, please.
Your mama's so fat, the hat sorted her into the House of Pancakes. I'll end on that one. We'll go out there. All right, here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now...
That shouldn't be that funny.
I know.
This is Don Taylor.
I have breaking news.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
I have breaking news.
You know what I did right there? I leaned back and was just busy being smug. I was just being satisfied with myself. That's what that was right there. All right, let me just...
All right.
We got a little breaking news here. This is Don Taylor.
TMZ reports that Charlie Sheen was taken to the hospital this morning because of horrible stomach pains. Notorious party boy Charlie Sheen was rushed to Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles early this morning, citing terrible stomach pains. The 45-year-old actor was reportedly taken out of his home on a stretcher and loaded into an ambulance at 7 a.m. He had a towel covering his face, and he was followed out of the house by two young women. An update later in the day at noon. TMZ reports that neighbors say Charlie threw a party last night and they could hear girls singing Red Hot Chili Peppers late into the night.
Really? Well, first of all, I am always amazed when you get these guys. Where was this home at?
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, so Beverly Hills or some such place. I'm always amazed when you get the reports from neighbors that, like, Charlie Sheen keeps us up all night. What is the point of being wealthy and living in Beverly Hills if you're so close to your neighbors that, like, you can hear them? You know what I mean? Like, you would figure that a house like that comes with at least insulation.
Well, I had friends who were very close to the woman who was whose husband had created the company Cherokee, and they lived in a house in Malibu. And the houses on the beach in Malibu are actually very close together. And he lived next door to Emilio Estevez. And the night that Kiefer Sutherland broke up with Julia Roberts. Apparently, Emilio Estevez and Kiefer Sutherland were up very late into the night, blasting rock and roll music and singing at the tops of their lungs.
Wow, that's just it. I mean, I guess it makes me feel good in a way because I sometimes just sit and bitch and moan about our neighbors sort of keeping us awake and just, you know, the loud rock and roll going late in the evening and what with the drunken debauchery. So I guess, you know, it's good to know that even if you're living next to Charlie Sheen, which means you have a lot of money, that's a problem for you as well. Now, the stomach pains, that's interesting. So you go right to drugs, of course, but it's like what kind of drug would just give you a lot of stomach pains?
He might have, maybe he has an ulcer. I mean, he's
what could possibly be causing him stress?
I know. He's ingested an enormous amount of things that he shouldn't ingest. And I'm sure he's under a fair amount of stress. And what with not having anybody to hit recently.
You should tweet that later on, by the way. Yes, I said tweet. Everybody's going to be okay with that. It slips out now and again. What are you going to do? You would figure that Charlie Sheen either has, that there's no middle ground. He either has lots and lots of stress. Or he has, like, no stress because he's just shooting heroin into his ears all the time. But apparently it is the former.
Well, yeah, he gets so easily punchy,
yeah.
It seems, that... and what
no, the, say, no release right now.
Brandishing the guns at his wives and shoving hookers into closets
he
and
does.
Stuff. So there's a lot going on there.
He seems to be surrounded by broken glass a lot, too, so it's...
Considering that he still has a job...
Yeah.
And is making a metric buttload of money... I mean, how hard can it be to be Charlie Sheen that he has to be that angry all the time?
Well, and he's the, I mean, and Emilio Estevez isn't all effed up or anything,
no.
Is he? I mean, you know, I don't know what he's up to these days. I mean, he kind of does stuff. He produces a lot now as opposed to acting. But, I mean, he seems to be relatively stable. Martin Sheen, you know, seems to, you know, he went through kind of a rough patch, but he came out all right on the other side of it. Joe Estevez, of course, is a separate, you know, that's a separate issue, but it always is. But, I mean, what is up with Martin Sheen specifically? I mean, it seems to be something. And, you know, it's interesting that I don't think I've ever seen Martin Sheen interviewed or asked about that. I don't think I've ever seen anybody say, like, Martin Sheen, well, like, what is up with your kid?
He's given interviews a few times when he's, like, bailed Charlie Sheen out of jail.
Really?
And then put him into rehab and stuff. But it's all very, like, the stuff that's obviously written by his publicists. And also, he's been in the business long enough, he knows what to say. Of, like, I stand by my son and I support him and I love him very much.
Now, I don't think
in this hour. And the thing is, you know, God only knows what he's saying to him behind closed doors.
I don't remember Charlie Sheen ever going to rehab, much less being put there by Martin Sheen.
Oh, yeah. His dad actually committed him to rehab at one time. Yeah.
Wow. When was that? Would that have been?
That was actually wasn't that long ago. Because if you're like way out of control, your relatives can actually put you in a
That's
place.
That's the thing where the family shows up and they say, get in the car.
Yeah.
Get in the car or get in the trunk. One of the two.
I think he was just trying to keep him from dying or going to jail at that point. It was like, you know, oh, you're going to rehab. You know, I think that was.
I like that, though, because that plays into my whole Martin Sheen really is Josiah Bartlett kind of a thing. Like, you'd like to. Because if I found out that Martin Sheen was just a horrible father or something, I think it would find it very troubling. Because I just make no division between the man and the character in that regard. So I like the idea that he is sort of a tough love, you know, the caring but stern father. Did I ever tell you that? Never mind. I was just going to go on about. I was going to go on about Martin Sheen. I was just going to turn this into a whole thing where I just go all gay about how great Martin Sheen is.
Love Martin Sheen.
He really is he's just, you know, I was watching The West Wing last night because that's one of those shows. Do you do this? Do you have shows that you're not watching them as such? But you will sometimes, you know, like I usually, like if I'm writing or I'm working, I'll do it to music. Very rarely do I have silence. Like I can't really work in a silent environment. So it's almost always music. But occasionally I will write or I'll work with television on. But it's got to be something that I've seen a million times. So my brain doesn't feel like it has to be listening to the dialogue. Instead, it almost becomes like its own kind of music.
Yeah.
And so I do that with The West Wing because the first four seasons of The West Wing I have just seen a jillion times.
It sounds kind of crazy, probably, but I do that with Glengarry Glen Ross.
Well, because it's like music, because it's so rhythmic.
It's very rhythmic, and it's.
No, I can totally see that. So I was totally in this whole Martin Sheen frame of mind because I was watching some episode last night where he like gives one of his great flowery, totally implausible speeches and just thinking like, I wish he was my president. And having one of those, you know, one of those like 2:30 in the morning, you know, moments where you just feel like you're going to weep openly at the idea that you will never be able to vote for Josiah Bartlett for president.
Watching The West Wing is a little bit to me, it's one like every once in a while I'll have a dream where I'm married to somebody who's like a famous, wealthy actor or something. Like I'll have some dream that I'm married to like Alan Rickman and we're in love. And then I'll have that moment when I wake up and just at the moment of waking up, it's like, my life is awesome. I live with Alan Rickman and oh crap. And it's like that with The West Wing. You watch The West Wing and you think, America is great. America is terrific. And then you have that moment where you go, except it's not really like that.
And then you realize, ooh, that's not a window,
why
it's
isn't
a TV
it like
screen.
That?
Damn. Yes.
So, when was the last time, speaking of Martin Sheen, when was the last time you saw Badlands with Martin Sheen and Sissy Spacek?
Probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Because that is a hell of a movie.
Oh, it really is. And it's like, I got to tell you this. Now, look, Rick Emerson's all man, you understand. But that opening sequence where it's like you just see Martin Sheen and he's got the jeans and the white T-shirt and she's on the lawn with the baton and the whatever. And it's like you just see him and you're just like, he really is in – not that there's such just a one type of classic American male, just like there's no type of one type of classic all-American girl. But he is a certain kind of classic all-American man in that film, of all-American guy.
Yeah.
He's the archetype. He, as well as it could possibly be depicted, way more than James Dean in some ways, because it seems a little more believable because he's so clearly authentically rough around the edges as a character. That is, it's a really good movie, and a movie that I haven't seen in. Because that's one of those things where, like, didn't Malick make it? He's one of those guys who makes a movie like every 14 years.
Yeah.
It's like some sort of filmic cicada where it's like he comes out of a. And he releases like some print and then he runs back underground.
And then everyone goes, the that was genius. Yeah. Make another one. He's like, I got other things to do. I'll see you in 12 years.
Bye now. Yeah. So, no, Badlands is a really, really great movie.
Yes.
Especially because there's just, because at a certain point it becomes, like, it seems like there's long sections of that movie where there's just, like, no dialogue or very little dialogue, or where it's, like, him just, like, staring at Sissy Spacek and, like, he says, like, it's something, isn't it? And she says, sure is. And then they just, like, drive for a while and, like, nothing happens. And then the next thing you know, they're building a treehouse and they're, like, living in the Mosquito Coast or something. And you're, like, what? And you, like, it becomes this weird Swiss Family Robinson, like, with killing thing. And you're, like, what is going on in this movie? But you believe it, like, the entire way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I'm a big fan of that movie.
Well, are we still waiting for Mr. Snyder?
He is not called, so I'm assuming that there's been some delay or he's been held up. So,
well, in the meantime, I want to read this email since we're on the subject of movies. And then if he calls, I'll just stop. But I got an email from listener Dan who said, hi, Dawn. You mentioned earlier this week Rick watching the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T. Amazingly, the night before, my girl and I had gone to a showing of that same movie. Dear Lord, is that a great but odd film?
A showing?
Sometimes theaters do show it. They've shown it here a couple of times over the years at the Baghdad for the weekend kids matinee.
Does he? Do you know if he lives here or does he live elsewhere?
He's in Olympia.
Oh, okay. All right.
Could you badger Rick to watch it? I'd love to hear your and Rickshaw's take on it. I think he meant Rick's and his phone, like, turned it into Rickshaw.
That's a damn you autocorrect moment.
As an aside to that, according to Wikipedia, the voice of the robot devil in Futurama was based on Dr. Terwilliger in 5,000
Okay,
Doctor,
see, so now...
Who was played by Hans Conried.
Now I gotta watch it.
Also, the mention of your damaging recommendations for movies, I actually watched Dead Girl on New Year's Eve with my girl and her 16-year-old cousin.
Fail.
This had followed other films involving penis biting, such as Teeth, in a previous week, so it was all part of a complex I have building.
By the way, can I just say
that... He says, but yeah, ooh, and never again.
Yeah, first of all, it sounds as though, the context makes it seem as though he did watch Dead Girl because of your anti-recommendation.
He says he watched on New Year's, so I don't think it really had anything to do with me.
Well, no, because you've been recommending it we've been talking about it vis-a-vis your recommendation for like a year and a half now or something, possibly longer than that. Or else he's just on like a penis biting jag of some kind. Teeth is incidentally a movie that I skipped altogether. That's a thing I just avoided.
I have that in my like Netflix queue and I keep meaning to watch it. And I've just never had that moment where I've just been in quite the right mood.
Yeah.
And then I'll pull it up and I'll go, oh, Patrick, we could watch Teeth. And he just goes, no.
No. Yeah.
And I go, okay.
And I suspect, look, I don't know. The stench of hype on that film seemed pretty strong to me. That it seemed like it was, every review I read of Teeth, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But every review I read, it was like the reviewer really wanted it to be much deeper than it really was. It seemed like everybody was trying to force a lot of like feminist subtext onto it.
Yeah.
And really, it was just like a thing about a toothy vagina. Because I think a guy dreamt it, like the human centipede thing. I went, I know, this will freak people out. And then, like, you know, sort of cobbled it to. That was like my thing with, you know, a movie that I wanted to like desperately and I just couldn't. Like, I went into it thinking, like, this is going to be great. And then it's like you get about 9 minutes into it and you go, okay, this doesn't look promising. And then, like, 40 minutes in, you go, well, this is bad. And then, like, an hour later, you go, and it's still going. That was the movie Hard Candy.
Yes.
And I really wanted to like Hard Candy.
I really do like that movie a lot. But yeah, I can see it because I saw that at a press screening when it was coming here. By the way, Eric Snyder will not be calling
us. Okay, all right.
He said he had to cancel. Sorry, have to go to a movie. Avenge me, avenge me. I'm not sure what the avenging him has to do with anything, but he has to go to a movie.
Okay.
I saw Hard Candy at a press screening, and then I really, really liked it. And had Patrick watch it later, and it just made him uncomfortable, and he didn't really care for it very much.
To me, I think maybe I went into it wrong, because my thing with Hard Candy is that I think I misunderstood the premise. I think I thought it was going to be a much simpler film than it really was. I mean, it's about a guy basically who meets an underage girl on the internet, and they go back to his house, and then I forget now what I thought happened, but I figured it was some sort of either like a not even a revenge thing, but you know, but I thought it was going to be a little sort of a one room one act play sort of as a film, that it was almost like an Oleana kind of a thing. I did not realize that it would just become, you know, such an over-the-top, that it would become such an elaborate, you know, like a maze of red herrings and double crosses and whatever, which is fine. It's just I think that maybe I was expecting a different film than the one I got. But, you know, what are you going to do? Who's the guy in Hard Candy? I can never remember his name, but he's a guy that I've seen in a bunch of stuff since then, and I can never quite conjure up what his name is.
He's one of those blandly handsome guys who's a really terrific actor, and I always forget his name as
well. Yeah, it's just falling out of my head. It's like that guy that was on. It's like that guy that played it's
Patrick something, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's like but it's completely escaping me. It's like the guy that played Will on Alias. Who I can never remember that guy's name. I just remember him as the guy. I remember him as Will and Alias, who kind of looks like Ben Stiller. That's all I can never remember the actual name of the guy.
Patrick Wilson.
And I can't see, but right now I couldn't even tell you what else he's been in. I mean, all right. Are we in the news here?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, let's do like two more. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We got Greg Nibbler, Sarah X. Dillon going to be joining us later on today. Also, Geek Watch, Peanuts Watch, Clergy Watch, and Clue number 4 for the EH Vending Contest.
Well, just for the fun of it, let's do this one as a taser watch.
Here's your taser watch for, for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can't do it, bro.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't taste me, bro.
A Kentucky woman is facing criminal charges after police said she fought with police officers. According to arrest records, Louisville police officers were called to an apartment building on reports of a fight involving a police officer on Wednesday morning. They arrived and found London J. Bazell, 43, holding a screwdriver in one hand and a bottle of Pine Sol in the other. When the officer tried to take the screwdriver from Bazell, she threw Pine Sol in the officer's face and began fighting. According to arrest records, Bazell then took the officer's portable radio. Police then shot Bazell with a stun gun, which had no effect and only made her angrier. Police were able to subdue Bazell. She's charged with assault, resisting arrest, and third-degree criminal mischief. And there is a fine, fine mugshot of this woman, London Bazell, at rickemerson.com pictures.
Excellent. And I did sneak a peek, actually, at the article before you read it. And that really is a great picture. She's she looks exactly like the kind of woman that you approach with caution, because you sense that probably it's not going to take a whole lot to push her into some sort of psychotic violence.
It's also the rare mugshot that you see that there is somebody else's hands in it holding her head still. So they can actually take the picture.
Quit thrashing. Don't make me get the trank. Awesome. All right, there you go. That's your taser watch for Thursday on the Mark Emerson Radio Program. Awesome. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
So Ashton Kutcher recently gave an interview to Men's Fitness and apparently went off on a sort of jag about the coming apocalypse. He was asked about, you know, working out and that sort of thing. And he said that, you know, you want to stay in shape. You want to be in good health for, you know, I guess after everything collapses. He said, people are going to go, that land's not yours. Prove that it's yours. And the only thing you have to prove it's yours is an electric file. Then it's like, what's the value of currency and whose food is whose? People's alarm systems, their homes will no longer work. Neither will our heating, our garbage disposals, hot water heaters that run on gas but depend on electricity. What happens when all our modern conveniences fail? I'm going to be ready to take myself and my family to a safe place where they don't have to worry. This week, I think it was last night, he was on Jimmy Fallon, and Fallon asked him about this, and Ashton Kutcher said it was basically a joke.
I was wondering if it was a thing that he was trying to be kooky.
The interviewer never picked up on. He said, here's the thing. you do these interviews for Men's Fitness or something, and they're always asking you, like, why do you work out? What's your motivation to stay in shape? So you don't really want to say, I want to look good. I want to be healthy. It doesn't really sound fun. So I kind of got going on this role of the apocalypse, and I thought she was getting the joke. And then I read the article, and she really didn't get the joke.
You know, it's that thing, too, where you will see sometimes somebody in an interview, and they're obviously – they have a very dry or wry sense of humor, or it's just a very sort of – you know, like it's an undercurrent of humor as opposed to just being on the surface, and the interviewer clearly doesn't pick up on it. And what's most awkward is when then you see the person being interviewed realize this, and they have to sort of consciously adjust, and then they just have to become – and then they have to turn themselves sort of bland and surface for the remainder of the interview because they realize that the journalist or whoever is just never going to sort of pick up on it. So – and this was an interview with who?
Men's Fitness.
Yes. Well, it's hard to believe that they wouldn't suss out the subtle nuance in his – the subtext in his yes. in his interview. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break.
Okay. Evan Solis, 19, and Brendan Smith, 18, were arrested for a rampage – through three cities in Pinellas County. I'm not sure where this is.
I think Pinellas County is in Florida. I'm just going to assume that it is for the sake of the sound effect.
I think it's in like South Dakota or something because it says Largo. And no, this is Florida. You're right. The men who shot up cars Friday night into Saturday morning were each charged with felony criminal mischief, according to arrest affidavits. There are mugshots, again, available at rickemerson.com. When confronted by Pinellas County Sheriff's Office investigators, Salas and Smith reportedly copped to damaging cars and trucks in Bel Air Bluffs, Largo, and Seminole. Asked why they would engage in such behavior, the pair explained they were bored. According to police, Smith and Salas were armed with newly purchased CO2-powered BB guns and took turns randomly shooting at vehicles from Smith's car. Reports are that they shot 275 cars.
Wow.
With their BB guns. Following his arrest, Smith admitted shooting out windows of unoccupied vehicles. According to the affidavit, Salas made a similar confession, admitting his involvement with, quote, 35% to 40% of the shooting. So he's doing some math there.
I was just going to say, it seems like maybe that's not even really a guesstimate. That's just the first number he thought of.
And these guys are just look like such pudgy dirtbags.
I'm looking at the thing here. I don't see the mugshots, by the way. Sadly, they have not arrived.
Well, I will.
So I'm just busy looking at the Pine Sol attacker. Here's the thing about this: when I'm looking at the Pine Sol woman, the left side of her face. I mean, that's a serious whomping somebody put on her.
Yeah,
that's a beating that. Somebody really gave her what for and what five as well.
Well, when you assault a police officer
with Pine Sol
and take their radio away from them, and then the taser doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to go badly.
Yeah, that's where they go to the mattresses right away. But when I first looked at this, here's the thing. I didn't realize that it was somebody holding her head still in the mugshot.
Yeah.
I thought she had like a kerchief or something on. Like I thought she had like a bandana or a, you know, like one of those, you know, like a thing. Like a, what do you call it? Like a hair tie or something.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because it's so you can see it on either side. And I thought, well, she's got like a handkerchief or something in the back of her head. But no, you're right. It's somebody wearing medical gloves just saying, hold still. And just trying to like get her to just remain stationary for one instant while they take her photograph. And you can tell, by the way. If you just look at this mugshot, it is caught like in the midst of like her mouthing off again about something.
Yeah.
Something like, that's right, you better stand back. I'll come over there. So, all right.
So I have resent that photo.
All right, I'll keep an eye out for them.
And by the way, our listener Mike has resent an email to tell us because the first time you didn't want to hear it, so he wants to make sure you know that they have Mrs. Freshley's at Walmart.
No. I feel bad about this because I saw that email last night.
And he says he did a follow up, but they don't actually sell them there.
I saw this. This is where I feel like an ass. I saw this email last night where he was following up. And I feel actually even worse because I got the original email from him about Mrs. Freshley because I had spent that whole 12 minutes rhapsodizing about this wafery, chocolatey, peanut buttery, crispy goodness.
And then I mentioned that email on the air and you were like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know. I'll go get them.
And I think I meant to respond to him and say like, what is his name? Mike?
Yes.
Say, dear Mike, thank you for helping out. You know, Rick Emerson appreciates the effort, but I can't go buy those. And then I just didn't. And then so when I saw the follow-up email last night, Then I got I just felt all this Catholic guilt for not responding to the original email. But then, of course, I didn't respond to the follow-up email.
Yeah.
So then I had this guilt. It was like this paralysis with a thin guilt candy coating on the outside.
Well, and now you're sharing that even better, though, than them being at Walmart, because they're not at Walmart, you can get them a 12-pack for a dollar at Dollar Tree.
That's not possible. You
That's
can't
what
get a 12-pack of Mrs. Freshley's for a dollar.
That's what he says.
Listen, Mrs. Freshley's.
And he also says, F you for getting me hooked on peanut butter bugles. And he actually spells it E-F-F.
Really?
Yeah.
That's sort of
he
great.
Says F. F you.
Mrs. Freshley sounds like some sort of unpleasant feminine product, you know? Like the kind... But like the kind that is destined for failure, the kind that you don't really, you know, like where your mom comes home and goes, well, now that you're becoming a young lady, I've purchased you a box of Mrs. Freshley's. And you just say, Mom, my friends are here or something. And she's like handing them to you while you're, you know, while you're busy making pom-poms for the big game or whatever. That's what I picture your childhood is like. But that probably has nothing to do with.
I don't think I ever made pom-poms. Wait, no, I did make pom-poms once because I was, I took a summer class on drill team. Why they had a summer class teaching you to be on a drill team, I have no idea.
Well, that's okay, but that's less interesting to me. The interesting thing is, why were you taking that class?
I don't know. Because I lived
That's
in,
a lie.
I lived in the suburbs, and there well, actually, I think I probably did it because my best friend did it. And so I would do anything she would do because, you know.
Because she was the cool one?
Yeah, because she was the cool one. So we did it, and I just, what's that song about dancing, you know? Nobody can do the boogaloo like I do. Nobody.
Oh yeah,
can
nobody
do
the, by the human beings.
That was the song we learned to do a drill team routine too. So because of that, I know how to like do the pony, and ostensibly the boogaloo.
Okay, the drill team at my school for some reason they were always and I don't remember. Here's an interesting thing: I don't remember how the song goes or the artist. I remember the name of the song, but I actually don't remember the melody, the hook, the whatever, which is sort of interesting. But usually it's the other way around, right? Where you go like, well, you know, that da-da-da-da-da-da-da thing. But it was a song called – I just remember the drill team was always using a song called Black Cars. And I don't remember – do you remember the song Black Cars?
No.
See, and that's the thing is I know definitively that was the name of the song and that those words were there in the chorus. And I think it was by some sort of a dancey kind of one-hit wonder sort of – sort of group, and I'm trying to think of somebody to compare them to. I keep wanting to say Billy Osher, but that's wrong. That's just a get into my car thing. but they were just using the song Black Cars, and then of course the other song that they would use on the rare occasion they wouldn't use Black Cars, they would of course use Axel F by Harold Faltermeyer. That was the that's the way we rolled in Kennewick. Zam.
Wow.
Yeah, we were lame. I'm gonna read the story to you, and then we'll take a break. This is from, let's see, one of the finest newspapers in the world, The Sun. Really, there are few newspapers better than The Sun. I would say, unless you're the New York Post or the National Enquirer, you are demonstrably not better than The Sun. The Sun is, I would say, The Sun is the greatest newspaper not in America. I'll put it that way. It is the greatest newspaper not found in these United States. Listener Mark the Brit knows what I'm talking about. He's picking up what I'm laying down out there. I'm just going to read you the headline here. First of all, I'm going to read you the headline. And then you won't get a full sense of it because it's black and white, but I'm gonna read you the headline, and then I'm going to show you just this one picture from the article, and I'll post it here in just a bit. Splinter in eye.
Ah!
No, it gets so much better. No. Splinter in eye kills jouster. See?
Oh, wow.
You didn't see it going that way.
No.
So look at it. You can see, by the way. That's the dead man. That's not one of those things where it's like an artist rendering.
No, that's actually the guy.
That's the dead guy. That's not like a clip art file photo thing.
Oh, wow.
It's a guy holding a thing, a jousting thing, a lance. This is from, by the way, and lest you think that I am suddenly giving, that we're giving you like period news, published today is what it says underneath. This is from today. This is today's Sun by staff reporter.
Staff reporter. That's the jousting, and it's staff. Kind of.
A jouster was killed when part of his own lance, apparently, broke off and pierced his eye, a coroner heard today. The splinter cut 5 inches into medieval reenactment enthusiast. Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I should have been prepared with it.
Do you have medieval jousting music?
You know, I thought that
another version of the Harry Potter theme would probably work.
I was actually going to say I think I really only have this. So we'll just which makes me want Taco Bell every time I hear it.
You know, that's not actually meat.
I know. A jouster was killed when part of his lance broke off and pierced his eye, a coroner heard today. The splinter cut 5 inches into medieval reenactment enthusiasts Paul Allen Anthony's head, leaving him with a severe penetrating brain injury. The horror happened as the 54-year-old took part in the filming for Channel 4's Time Team programma, hosted by former Blackadder star Tony Robinson, who played Baldrick.
Oh.
A coroner ruled today that Mr. Allen had died because he was not wearing a proper helmet or holding his shield proper. Well, he loses then. He's lost the competition. Yeah. Or holding his shield properly during the TV jousting competition. By the way, Mr. Allen had never jousted before, but had practiced many times before with a rubber lance.
Oh.
There you go. That just seems like you're starting out of the wrong end of things. All right.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Let me just segue right into it. It's the piercing of the eye is never never a good thing. That always it's always just degrees of bad.
That's one of the few things that really, really makes me squeamish is things having to do with eyeballs.
Yeah. Somebody says if he'd treated his flying ostrich better, this never would have happened. You are correct, sir. We're going to take a moment to talk about Squires Electric. They help to make this fine radio program possible. You can show them your support as they show us their support. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. You can go to squireselectric.com to find out more. Squireselectric.com. And oftentimes, not unlike your lancing skills, you know, you don't really, you know, jousting is a thing you don't really give any thought until you dishonor somebody's, reputationally. You sully the good name of their maiden, and then suddenly you find yourself in the back of a horse and everybody's singing Queen songs. The next thing you know, bing, bam, boom. Can I just tell you that I watched A Knight's Tale the other day?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing about that movie. That's not bad.
No, I liked it very much, but talk about movies that are divisive.
Yeah.
A lot of people really hated it, and I think it was mainly because they hated the use of modern music in it. I really liked that movie.
Okay, here's the thing. I hadn't intended this whole conversation as one big setup, but it inadvertently became that about halfway through your reply. Riddle me this, Don Taylor. Mm. How is it that you can like A Knight's Tale and yet not like Moulin Rouge?
I do like Moulin Rouge.
I thought you disliked Moulin Rouge intensely.
No, I love Moulin Rouge.
Well, who the hell am I thinking of?
I'm not sure.
Are you sure you don't dislike Moulin Rouge?
I'm sure. I don't know if you and I have ever really talked about it, but I know a lot of people that really, really hate it a lot. And of all of my film critic friends, Scott Weinberg is the only one, I think, who really loves Moulin Rouge as much as I do. No, I love it.
It's possible that I'm thinking of Cheryl, I guess, but I don't think Cheryl dislikes Moulin Rouge. Maybe she does. Well, never mind. Everybody's just typing me in the
chat. Could be that Scott Daly. I mean, he doesn't like Tombstone, so he's capable of anything.
That's possible. Okay, well, never mind then. I'm so glad you like Moulin Rouge,
yeah.
A, because it's a great film, and also because it would just seem inconsistent for you to like one another. Knight's Tale, though, not a bad film at all.
No, a lot of fun.
You know, speaking of Heath Ledger, you know what else is not a bad movie? Is it 10 Things I Hate About You?
I love that movie.
Not a bad movie at all.
Yes.
I mean, I'm firmly in the pro camp there.
That falls into that Dirty Dancing area for me where it's a chick flick, but I will watch it whenever it's on.
It's a great movie.
And I really, really like it.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I have no point here except to say that you don't really think about your jousting skills until they're called upon, just as you don't think about the electrical system in your house or your business until it doesn't work anymore. That's until you have this moment, like we were talking about the other day, sometimes with your computer, with your car, you lose your house keys or whatever, where you go into the house and you turn on the switch, you go, well, that's funny. And what do? You just sit and flip the switch back and forth. As though that makes any sense at all, by the way. I mean, talking about things that are just repeating the same action, just expecting a different outcome. What the hell are you flipping the switch for? What is up with that? Is it like the switch is suddenly going to wake up or something? It remembers, oh, sorry. It's not the Flintstones where there's like a monkey back there that has to, it's living, and put out a candle for you.
Like you're trying to warm it up somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You got to get a good running start at it. You have to prime it. So, you know, I'm just saying, you either understand how that stuff works or you don't. If you don't, skip the section where you buy a book for like $4 at Goodwill and think that you're going to be able to avoid electrocuting yourself. That's not going to happen. You just call 503-252-1609 or go to squireselectric.com or write that number down for the future when you will need it. 503-252-1609. Free estimates so you know up front what it's going to cost you. No job too small or too large. That is Squires Electric. Squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, it can make your life easier. And of course, they are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio program. So please do tell them you heard it here, won't you? That is Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Everything's turned upside down.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. By the way, for those who may have been asking themselves during the break, I wonder what Dawn Taylor is doing right now. How does she spend her precious moments away from the microphone? When she's not bringing joy to millions, how does she occupy her existence? The answer is, well, right now the answer is drinking hams. Moments ago, the answer was watching the Hams television commercial featuring the large dancing bear.
Yes. When I was in kindergarten, my parents got sort of reprimanded by the teacher that it was not appropriate for me to be coming to school and teaching the other children the Hams beer jingle.
By the way, in case you're wondering how the Hams got into the studio, you probably already come to the conclusion yourself that Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon are to my immediate right.
Hey, we just offered it. She said yes.
Oh, no. I'm just saying. I don't want anybody to what is going on?
I don't know.
One sip of Hams and she's already
throwing things around.
Hey, well, I'm all aflutter because famous people are here. Because I get excited when I'm around famous people.
It's like you have some magical ability to conjure them.
I'm going to post that on Twitter right now.
I think I'm going to write a blog about it.
I hope you guys become my friends.
Why do you do this? Why do you just turn everything into
hate? I can't help it. She's the gift that keeps on giving, and I am so addicted to her.
We mean Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yes.
God bless her heart.
I wanted to make sure we didn't take credit for the Hams beer, because that actually was this a listener of your guys that I came in. It was like a couple weeks ago. I walked in, and there was like five cases of Mickey's in the
like
kitchen.
A pallet of Mickey's in there.
And like, yeah, two cases of Hams and like a case of Rainier, I think. And then like something. There's
something
some other...
in a black can.
Steel Reserve.
I think it's, yeah, Steel Reserve.
Yeah, that's still in the package. That looks kind of scary.
And we'll save that for Bill Oakley.
Yeah.
And is that just a guy who just like, did that just arrive?
Yeah, listener Dan actually dropped it off.
Yeah, and he's a listener to your show as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Greg Nibbler, Sarah X. Dillon from funemploymentradio.com. And of what other broadcast outlets are you now a part?
Well, we are now going to be part of trailblazers.tv as well.
Excellent.
Sports!
I was just now in the kitchen. I was actually watching part of the show that you guys did with our friend Dan Harbison.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those things where it's, I guess you guys are in the same, you're in the same room. For a minute, I thought it was like an Al Jazeera thing where you are like on some satellite feed from somewhere else, because it's like, it's a really cool looking setup, and the way they're lit, it almost looks like it's in two different studios.
It totally does.
But so you guys were there. You're being interviewed by Dan Harbison. And then, so, well, I'll just let you guys tell. So what is the deal, and when does it happen? And
Okay, well, so we're, I guess, in development phase of the show?
We're in development.
Development phase. So it's a show that's going to be on Trailblazers.tv, which they're all live streaming video shows. And we're going to be bringing a show there that has, it focuses on the Blazers, but it's more about Portland in general and kind of tying the two together. So it's not going to be your typical sports show where it's all statistics and stuff like that.
Yeah, because they have a lot of those, and they wanted something to incorporate our awesome city, you know, into the mix and talk about the Trailblazers.
So it is like an entire show of color commentary, almost.
Yes.
Kind of,
in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
And so it is in development right now. And does mm-hmm. it have, is there a name? Is there anything? Is
no,
there,
we're that's trying to what figure we're working out on. The name. Yeah.
Yeah. They put it out there on the show that we were on yesterday. We were on Just Casey's show, and they put it out there for anybody who can come up with a name, you know, send in suggestions. So we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
If anybody has a suggestion, you know, send us an email, funemploymentradio@gmail.com. But I don't know. I haven't been able to
I know. We've just been mostly, like, focusing on what we're going to be talking about, and then I'm just like, oh, my God, we don't even have a name.
Yeah, we got to name it.
Okay,
yeah.
Seriously, now, at any point, did you consider suggesting that it be called, like, Let's Talk Balls or, you know?
That'd be kind of
I'm
awesome.
Telling you.
Is that?
I'm just saying. It just, you know, I know that that's a thing you've branded as part of Fun Employment Radio. But, you know, I'm just.
Greg does like talking about balls.
Balls are a universal. They're a universal like. You know, really.
Balls to the wall. Balls on Portland?
Balls on Portland. Awesome.
Don, you're an evil genius. I would love to be part of a show called Balls on Portland.
Look, I mean, I think the room has come to a consensus.
Or Portland balls.
Yeah. Balls around Portland.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a possible thing.
Here's the thing.
Sounds
Greg
like
is,
something that happens in Chinatown on the weekends.
Craig's doing that whole, like, yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, that's great.
Stop talking
about that's wonderful.
That's a great idea.
And he's, like, trying to, he's doing, he's sending you, like, the willing you to take the conversation into a different area. So I have to ask this. So what we've all done, I mean, we've all done on-camera stuff to some degree. And it's like, and you've done stage stuff. I don't know if you've done, have you done much TV?
Just a little tiny bit. Nothing anybody ever saw. So
you well see you think that that's the thing that's the lie you
it
tell
never
yourself.
Goes away.
You said like I did a terrible show once. I'm glad that nobody has it on DVD.
Oh God! So,
someday I will get you to transfer the. I only have it on videotape. Sadly, the show that I did with it wasn't with Dave Helfrey. I was going to do a TV show with Dave Helfrey, but before that, for my audition to show him that I was good enough, I showed him. I have a tape of the cable access show I did in Los Angeles before I moved here.
Must bring.
What is it? What did you talk about?
Well, it was a sketch comedy show. It was called Rockets to Paradise. And it was.
On a scale of 1 to 15, how embarrassing is it in retrospect?
It's pretty embarrassing, although I'm still kind of proud of the episode where I went to the Hollywood Christmas Parade and did like color commentary of the parade live standing next to on the parade route.
Can I just tell you this? You guys are a bad influence,
what
by the way.
What are you talking
about? This is Sarah and Greg. Because
we just like to come in and get Don drunk and leave.
Yep. Your problem now.
And then I'm the one who has to change your pants later, by the way.
Not kidding.
For those who are playing the Don Taylor home game, so not only has her car been towed once.
Oh, it got towed?
No, we just found out that her, once, a few weeks ago, or I guess a couple months ago. But we found out, Donna, the office manager, just came up, and we found out that Don had left her lights on at 11:30. And this was about 15 minutes ago. So the lights were on for 3 hours, so it'll be sort of it's going to be like a 6-of-1 thing as to whether your car actually starts.
You're going to have to jump me.
Also your problem.
But
my car died yesterday, and guess who had to jump my car?
Yeah, that's right.
It is just one of those things you don't really realize when you agree to do a show with somebody that you're basically agreeing to bail them out of jail, to
help them move,
clean the vomit off the front of their shirt at some point,
make
and
sure
you know,
they get home okay.
At least I didn't oversleep and miss an entire show.
Oh.
Why is it gotta go to the mattresses like that?
Oh, dude.
Why do you have to break the glass and pull out the fire hose right now? You know,
I thought there was going to be a buffer between like gentle prodding and a bitch slap.
I thought we had an understanding about the nuclear option in these arguments. I don't even remember what I was talking about now. Cable access, something or other. It's all. I was going to say that I try to be very circumspect on the show when we talk about other people or refer to colleagues or one-time colleagues. But then it's like Greg and Sarah get in this, and it's just sort of like attacked be gone. And immediately I just find my mouth opening to say all kinds of horrible things about people, things that I will probably regret saying.
No, I was telling Greg, like, when I showed you the thing, I'm sorry that we're doing the thing where I'm talking about something that we're not going to talk about. But when we were at the coffee shop talking about it, I'm like, I cannot wait to show this to Rick. Like, I was seriously like,
she was quite excited about it.
My God. And I, okay, I got to get myself back on track.
Yeah,
During the off the air segments, things get like high school gossipy around here.
Well, I was going to say that speaking of things that are embarrassing on cable access. So have you guys seen the thing? Have you guys seen the Milwaukee Teddy Bear Parade?
No.
Oh man,
that sounds incredible.
It's a special kind of magic. It's so unbelievably wonderful. It is because you know they have like the Rose Parade and the Light Parade and the Kids Parade that they have for the Rose Festival. Mm-hmm. All that stuff. There's this thing they have in Milwaukee, and it's in that part of it's kind of like where by Dark Horse Comics is. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's not like a real bustling part of town or anything, anyway. But I swear to God, it is just this thing they do once a year where it's. I mean, they call it a parade, but it's just like. Some people from town get to, like, some people from, you know, from, like, the rec center down, like, by the nursing home, you know, because like, somebody will tack a notice up in the cork board next to the ice cream social announcement, and they will do this thing that happens on a Saturday morning where a bunch of adults and older people and sometimes kids will get teddy bears, and they will put them in either wagons or sort of, like, miniature sort of toy cars, and they will just... They will sort of like wheel them down the center of Main Street.
That is amazing.
Wow.
And there's about 12 people standing on the sidewalk watching.
Are they sitting with the reserved seats like taped off?
Yeah.
Lunch.
So there's like 50.
This would be Oregon City, apparently. And they say on their website, they proudly say it's one of the city's signature events.
So here's the thing is there's always like five times as many people in the parade as there are watching it. So there's like everybody in the town is in the middle of the street. And then there's like, you know, a bunch of stragglers on the sidewalk watching it. But then they do this thing, or at least they did it last year, because I flipped by and I happened to see it on cable access accidentally. I was like looking for QVC or something, and I landed on it, where there's a male...
Dance sequence?
No. There's a male-female broadcasting team, and I swear to Christ, they are sitting on the sidewalk, and they've got the John Madden headsets on with the huge earpieces.
Oh, awesome.
And like the pilot microphone that comes down in front, and they're going, "It is really just a glorious day to be here in Oregon City, and really, this is community at its finest. When you see this many people come out, and Bob, don't you agree?" "That is right, Susan. That is really amazing to see this kind of spirit in your city, and really the throngs of people here for the Teddy Bear Parade." And then it's like the camera pulls back, and there's no one there. There's no one there. There's like a guy who's just there because he's waiting to cross the street to buy some stamps or something, and that's it. And then there's just like a bunch of like sad housewives pushing teddy bears along, and like, you know, like in a little wheeled thing. It's so awesome. Sad and great all at once.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah.
So that's when you were talking about, you know, going and doing the thing. But so this will not at all be like that. This will be the Blazers, because that's a real...
It was so cool yesterday. I've got to say, like, we were geeking out. Like,
yeah.
Going into the Rose Garden when there's nobody in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, into the party suite that's like the super high corporate... Yeah. Thing that people can rent out.
Like, it's glass walls and the fanciest sink I've ever seen in my entire life. It was like a flat sink.
It was flat
and it had like this beautiful like waterfall. Like, yeah, it's like all different like magical colors and stuff. It was so pretty in there.
Did you have that little moment though where you were there and you're looking around and you're going like, you know, again, it's, you know, such a huge facility and it's, you know, millions of dollars worth of equipment and, you know, architectural design, and it's, you know, they're a massive organization, and you're just like, you know, they called the wrong people, I think, by accident.
I'm like, well, oh my God, what's I think they made a mistake.
Did they think we're another Greg and Sarah show?
Yeah, I was just in my mind the whole time, I'm just like, be cool, try not to sweat too much.
What was
Don't
it?
Let him see a sweat.
You guys, now you, Sarah, you have not done TV since Coin,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so it's been about 5 years. Yeah, so, 4 or 5 years.
So traveling on Coin is 5 years, and then Greg, you've done, you did a sketch comedy, participated in a sketch comedy venture of your own.
I did do that on television, and then covered the Consumer Electronics Show, which was reporting and that kind of stuff.
Is that
too,
the thing where you talked to Hammer?
I did. Yeah, interviewed Hammer, who did not want to be interviewed and was not very happy about that.
Didn't you interview Jordy LaForge too?
I did. Yeah, yeah. He was a prick.
All right.
Really?
Quite honestly. Yeah, he was. He was a jerk.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I know. I shattered everything I thought about it too. I'm like, this is Reading Rainbow. I'm so excited to come talk to him. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yes, I'm here.
Can we wrap this up now?
Jordy's a prick and Will Wheaton's a nice guy. It's like Bizarro Universe.
Yeah.
Crusher.
So you now are you already getting? I'm not trying to put anything in here, but you're already getting the weird television neuroses, though. Are you already? Like...
Oh yeah, I became anorexic this morning.
Good for you. Well done.
Yeah, I decided food and I, we're just gonna break up.
Yeah, no need.
I need. It's funny too because like you know I felt okay about myself and then looking at myself, you know we were watching it before. I'm like. It's funny how TV really does add weight.
Yes.
And well, I'm just like, who is that little chubby person sitting there in the pink sweater? That's me.
Well, it was funny because I showed up today and she hadn't seen the video yet. And I was like, oh, I watched part of it. The first question out of her mouth was, did I look fat? Like, no, you didn't look fat.
You know, and I should have really rethought the sweater, though. Like, we need some TV tips from you because I was wearing a sweater underneath these bright lights. Both of us wore sweaters.
Yeah.
And we're like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, sweating?
We were talking about this actually last week. The television does, it brings out vanity that you pretended you did not have. Mm-hmm. I mean, television really does. Television really is magical in that it conveys the real person, not just like when you're watching somebody on TV. And there's that whole thing about like, you know, like people who heard the Nixon-Kennedy debate on the radio thought Kennedy won, or Nixon had won, but people who watched it on TV thought Kennedy won. And they say, well, that's because television is because people are superficial and people only pay attention. But I don't think that's true. I think that in some degree, I think the camera... People can just tell something by watching you for protracted periods of time. And it's like they would just see Nixon and go like, well, that guy's clearly like an untrustworthy psychopath, you know? Or you would see like Bill Clinton on TV and you go, well, that guy clearly can't stop humping waitresses at the Waffle House, you know? Like you can just tell. But it also brings up things about you if you are on TV. Mm-hmm. Whatever lie you tell yourself, however you like to believe that you are above petty vanity and, you know, an obsession over minor details of your own appearance, that goes by the wayside. Yeah. Like, your ego becomes front and center the first time you see a hair out of place on camera.
Yep. I know intellectually, I know that I am much fatter and goofier in real life than I think I am inside my own head. And then I see myself on camera and it's amplified so much that it's just horrifying to me. That it's just every twitch, every gesture, everything my face does is just hateful to me.
I was noticing that I'm a slow blinker. I was looking at that and I'm just like, I need to stop doing that blinking thing. See, and there's no way I can control it because I was looking at it. I'm like, why am I blinking so long?
Well, there's a bright light on us though.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. I noticed I fidget too much. I noticed that. I mean, it wasn't even that much, but I'm like, what am I doing with my hands? Put your hands down. The worst part was, so we did the show, and we filmed the intro, but they had tech problems, so we had to redo the intro. And they didn't really give us much warning. It was like, okay, and 2, 1, and I'm like, oh, we're going right now, and I hadn't turned my phone off. So the first 10 seconds are me fidgeting with my phone, trying to turn it off.
And then
finally, I just shove it into the couch cushion, thinking, the camera won't see that.
There's no way that this magical device in front of me will actually capture the image of me shoving the phone. That's crap. Last week, I think it was, on Outlook Portland, we had Seth Aaron, who's the fashion designer. He lives in Vancouver. He was the winner of Project Runway Season 7.
Cool.
And I mean, and Dawn can tell you this because she's more familiar. I mean, I knew it sitting next to him, but I mean, he's like the most stylish guy that I will probably ever be in the same room with.
Yeah.
I mean,
and stylish without being like stereotypically, like, you know,
in your face.
Yeah, he's just like very cool and very hip and very good looking,
effortlessly,
and very heterosexual. Mm-hmm. And it's like, damn, you know how.
You look at him and it's like, in a way, well, you know, and I've said this about the way you dress, Sarah, where it's like a bunch of things that really shouldn't go together, that like you could put them all on a table and go like 9 of these 10 items work. Tell me which ones. And I would never know. But some people just have a sense for which things go together. And he was just like, it was a whole combination of things that shouldn't have gone. It was like he had the sort of a black and gray suit. But then he had like a huge like skull thing hanging off something or other. Mm-hmm. And then he had the chipped black nail polish and then like a red thing tied around something on his leg or whatever. And it was like it should have looked horrible and tacky
awesome.
And whatever. Yeah. And it was like, but it was just fantastic. And I realized how dumb it was that the night before I was actually making sure that I bought a new shirt identical to all my other ones, by the way.
Was it black?
It was a cream-colored shirt.
Oh.
That's him with a goofy faux hawk, which he doesn't usually have.
Oh,
but still.
He's dapper.
He really is. It's amazing. But I told Cheryl the night before we're talking. She's like, okay, don't forget, you know, like big show, Seth Aaron tomorrow. Don't freak out. And I'm like, okay. And I became suddenly self-conscious of the fact that like the shirt I wear, you know, because I have like 3 or 4 that I kind of cycle through, but they had that makeup line that was starting to develop in the collar. And so then I just became racked with neuroses that the fashion guy from Project Runway would think I was a rube. So there I'm at like 8:59 trying to get the Men's Warehouse place to like open up so I can buy a shirt. By the way, followed up by my special trip to Sephora so I could buy a new tin of Summer Bisque foundation. Because that's going to make all the difference in the world, right? Like, making my skin a slightly different shade is going to erase the fact that I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And then what do I do? And then I just sit and I stare at myself, stare at myself in the mirror, you know, for like 15 minutes
then
trying to figure it out.
Then he shows up and he looks like this.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that is a beautiful man.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, it really is.
You can't compete. No amount of scrubbing can match up to that. Yeah. And not just you. I mean, like anybody.
That's what Cheryl Finder told me. She's like, if it makes you feel better, you can just give up. Because it's not going to work.
That was like when we had this comedian in who turned out to be a very lovely girl. But she was like but she was super gorgeous. She's an ex-Raiderette cheerleader.
She was quite attractive, yes.
And that was, I'm like, I'm not even trying today. Like, I just put on like my oldest pair of jeans and like a sweatshirt and no makeup. It's like, because sometimes you just know what you're going to lose.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to compete. I'm like, I'm not going to try to look
good. Steer around the mountains.
You win, bitchy Raiderette. You win.
So are you guys going to be interviewing players? You guys going to be doing, or is it sort of a blank slate? I mean, you guys kind of able to craft the show yourselves?
Obviously, yes, there will be player interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one of them, and Dan's the, we could talk about this too, and how we're
going to be. Okay.
Yeah, and so we're going to be actually having, so we're starting off with a weekly show.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other things we're going to be doing is going out around town, taking out players and doing like Portland-y things.
Wow.
Yeah. I know.
That's pretty amazing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is this now, so are there just, it's going to be sort of a, where like you show them stuff in Portland, or it's like your guide to Portland with a player along, or is it going to be you following what they want to do?
Yeah,
or?
Kind of like showing the players and then also showing people who are watching, you know, the cool things that Portland has to offer.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of the players, you know, they just go back to their mansions in Lake Oswego or whatever. They don't interact with the city too much just because they don't probably know what to do.
Right.
And so we're going to try to take them out and show them some cool things to do and like have them interact. And,
yeah, we've been like looking up, you know, Portland things, you know, like something like SantaCon.
Right.
Yeah. That happened. You know, just kind of, you know, take the Blazers around and, you know, show them different.
Well, you know, on May 21st, that teddy bear parade.
That's true.
That is awesome.
You should totally do that.
Seriously.
This is the coolest thing that happens in this city.
It's a slow pan from the players to the empty sidewalks.
Can we make a pact now that we all go down and cover the teddy bear parade?
Absolutely.
Oh, I just made a point of putting it in the thing because we are doing something with the teddy bear parade.
I want to go down and be really competitive with the crew that covers it for the local cable channel.
Jostle them out of the way.
Try to like step in front of them and get the interviews before them.
If you're going out with the players, if you're going to be filming that, but is the show it's online, so is it live or is it partially live?
The thing with the players would be like a pre-produced segment, but yeah, the show itself.
Can people call in? Can people text? Mm-hmm.
There's a chat box right there, so it's instant interaction with everybody.
Which was hilarious yesterday because people were chatting and like because there were a lot of listeners on there too, as well as people who are big fans of Jess Casey. And so like this guy named Tom, I remember Tom just wrote, "Sarah, I like your sweater, but stop slouching."
That's
great.
That's fantastic.
I won't be self-conscious about this for the next 45 minutes.
Well, it reminded me of working in Coin. Like, little mean old ladies would go, like, write and say, like, "Your blazer is ugly. I hate your hair." I'm like, why are you so mean, old lady?
That's the thing. It's like, who does that?
Mean ladies.
Like, who takes the time to actually personally insult someone they've never met and who has never done anything to them and who clearly is sitting on camera, like, trying to do the best they can with, like, saying gridlock 100 different ways.
Well, I had a 90-second break that I had to fill regardless. Right. And if there's, and I'm there, they made me, you know, be there at 4 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing going on. I have to fill 90 seconds. So I'm standing there like an idiot, like sitting there babbling about how there's nothing going on anywhere and listing like every road in the entire state.
Yeah.
You're no Tracy Berry. I don't like this person.
The show you guys did with Dan Harbison, is that up? Can people watch that?
Mm-hmm. You can go to trailblazers.tv and then just click on videos. It's right there and it'll have that. Yeah, actually, it pops right up.
Awesome. Uh-huh. Yeah. So you will be letting people obviously know when this is getting ready to launch and when it's rolling out.
Yep.
So people can hear more about that at funemploymentradio.com. Mm-hmm. And I guess they can go to, and it's trailblazer.tv.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to just bookmark that now.
It's a subset of NBA.com.
Cool. I saw that because here's the thing.
I know.
And I have to say,
if you accidentally type railblazers, you get an aluminum railing system.
That's better than what I thought you were going to get, actually, for some reason.
Yeah, me too.
I will say, actually, that I speaking for Donna, for myself, for everybody, so congratulations again. I mean, it really is fantastic.
You.
I am really, I really am truly, honestly, and I don't mean that in the way that show business people really, you know, usually mean it, where they go, yeah, that's great, that's wonderful, that's great for you. I'm glad that something worked out for you. How great that your talent has been recognized. No, see, and I got to fight it down because I almost said something about something there.
I know, I can't. Yeah. You're baiting me with the Project Runway thing too.
We should come up with.
I know it's so. It's right there.
We should come up with a code name.
There you are in that pink sweater.
There I am, my pink sweater slouching.
We should come up with a code name for her, so we can reference her.
Sorry, she wouldn't even know we're talking about her. She associates with famous people.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
I guess.
But I was typing in the Trailblazers. I guess I couldn't quite remember what the URL was yesterday. So I was typing in like Trailblazers and TV and Trailblazers TV and whatever, and all that kept coming up was like NBA.com/Trailblazers, and I thought, well, that camp pot, oh my God, that is it. So, I mean, it really is very cool. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
It was so exciting. Like, being at the Rose Garden, walking into Blazers headquarters is so cool because, like, the entire front entrance is just a huge Blazers insignia on the, carpet in front. And then, like, looking down in the Rose Garden, seeing it completely, you know, thousands and thousands of
seats. I was going to ask what it's like to see that empty.
It was so cool.
It's surreal. Yeah, it was really cool. Like, everything is dark except for the court, which is all lit up.
Have you gotten to go down to the court and, like, stand?
No. Wanted to.
That's, you got to get your photos taken. You got to get like your press photos taken at center court.
Yes.
Greg and I already talked about it. Like, as soon as we get permission, like, I'm going to take a picture of him standing in the middle of the court and then run down and he's going to take a picture of me.
That's fantastic. I may have already asked this. Is it going to be monthly, weekly, daily?
It'll be weekly.
For now.
All right.
Yeah.
So the name's still to be decided.
Yeah, so if you think of anything, yeah,
Balls
please.
Balls in Portland.
Greg Nibbler, we'll just go out on that. Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon, you can hear them later on today at funemploymentradio.com. Tell me a little bit about today's program.
Oh boy, we have a program today.
We have a very special guest coming in today. Mark Maron from the WTF podcast is going to be here.
That's quite a guest.
You really did a full McRib inhale there.
That is quite. I've been a fan of his for a long time.
Well, you see, he's coming in at 5 if you want to stick around. Like, if your car won't start. Okay.
And besides, and we'll repeat the whole Ben Bailey thing of like, this is Dawn. How high? And then I leave.
He loosened up so much more because he was just in a bad mood when he got there. And then after like 20 minutes, he was totally.
Yeah.
Like,
he was obviously in get in here, get this done kind of mode when he walked in the room.
We just finished an interview with somebody who didn't know who he was.
And made a point of saying that on air.
See, now, and I hate to be that guy again. Now, yeah, Sarah just mouthed at me the person it was. And that doesn't sound.
That's what he said. He said the station and he said the person.
Really?
And I know, and it was the morning show, and I know.
That doesn't sound like something that a person would do, but I mean, but it must have happened. He doesn't seem like a guy who would. I mean, Ben Bailey didn't seem like a guy who would just say that.
No.
And he was
oddly specific,
irritated about it.
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, kind of hurt his feelings a little bit, you know, because like, just take a couple of minutes to do some research.
Well, I was gonna say you got the internet right there.
Yeah.
You know, you could just sort of
Ben Bailey in Google. You'll have 800 pages that describe him.
Real quickly, was he a cool interview though? I didn't get a chance. I wasn't here that day, and I get just hear the show. So
yeah, he was actually really cool.
Yeah,
I mean, he loosened up, you know, after 10-15 minutes and realized, you know, we weren't gonna be jackass radio.
Yeah, because he had like, you know, like 15 interviews that day, and you know, especially people like walking in and have people not know who he is, you know, just like not prepared.
Asking the same like 5 questions over and over and over again.
Yeah, but he was super, super cool guy. Like just as intimidating and like awesome
and
person.
Yeah, 6'6".
Yeah.
And so today's show is going to be up around, I don't know, 6:30 Pacific time?
Probably
a little bit later
because he's coming in later, so probably by 7.
I'm so nervous, excited. People are like,
I'm excited.
I'm excited for you.
Thanks. I know everyone. It's funny watching like everyone's comments on.
Yeah.
This.
No, it's really cool. That is fantastic. You guys are you're on a streak. Things are happening.
Yes.
You are on your way.
Maybe
the wave
one of these
has
days
begun.
We'll make some money.
Well, come on.
Don't get over your heads there.
Until then, we have a free pallet of beer.
That's what I'm saying. As long as that's handled, really, everything else is just sort of gravy. Greg Nibbler, Sarah X. Dillon, you can hear them at funemploymentradio.com. That is this afternoon at funemploymentradio.com. And be watching for them soon at trailblazers.tv. That is trailblazers.tv. They will be on there sooner rather than later. So you can watch them right now. So we will be back after this. So congratulations again. And
Thank you. Thank you for having us on. So
yeah.
No, absolutely. This is like one of those things people say they never meet it, but we should do this more often.
Yeah, because you guys need to come back on our show too.
Yeah,
so. We really need to set something.
Yeah,
and I think it's good to do it without the snacks.
Yeah.
Because that was a mistake.
Well, because then you just... Then
we can't eat snacks anymore anyway because of...
That's right, because you're on TV. Oh,
that's right, because of the weight.
We don't do that food stuff. Help each other throw up.
They're in show business now.
You know, we had a friend who will hold your hair is a true friend, Sarah. It is the Rick Evers radio program. Greg Nibbler, Sarah X. Dillon, funemploymentradio.com this afternoon, and watch them on trailblazers.tv. We're back after this. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to the Emerson News Network. Stay right there, won't you please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm And where it goes, I hope it stays, 'cause it's not welcome here today. And I like it, love it that way.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. You were asking earlier, we were mentioning the... mentioning the myriad ways in which people can contact us. You said it's amazing we don't actually get more phone calls. And I was thinking maybe it's because people wonder if they're going to become some ongoing never mentioned by name but constantly referenced punchline in a series of anecdotes that you and I and Greg and Sarah cackle about evilly at future points.
Except that no, we reserve that for people we know in real life.
I was going to say that. Of course, those people are never. Yeah, it's like
the listeners.
It's never the listener. No. It's never the listener. It's always like some guy we used to work with at some other station like 4 years ago or whatever. It's always like, you know, it's always a guy that worked down the hall for me in Tuscaloosa. Have I shown you, oh my God, have I shown you this? Have I sent you the video of, I believe that the way he is described on, I believe the way, I should have done this with Greg and Sarah here. Damn me to hell. I believe the way he is described on YouTube is, I believe he's termed the gayest DJ ever. But that really is, but it's sort of a figurative gayness. Have I shown this to you?
No.
Okay,
no,
I'm gonna send it to you here in just a few, and I'll post it online so that we can all watch and be horrified together. I showed it to Siegfried last night, because speaking of guys I used to work with, because I did not work with this particular DJ, but we were watching this video clip yesterday. I told Siegfried, I'm like, I got to show you the worst DJ in the history of the world, because somebody sent it to me, and we got about halfway through it, and Siegfried just looked at me and he said, "You've worked with 100 guys just like this, haven't you?" And I said, "Yes, I have." But the best part is it's a DJ at a top 40 station in San Diego, but there is a webcam in the studio with him. Horrifyingly, I don't even think he's playing to the webcam. I think he's just a colossal douche, like, all the time, and the webcam was just there to sort of capture it. I think Howard may have mentioned it in some way, because somebody, I got, like, there's a day where, like, I had two or three people who sent it to me. So I'll find that here in just a few. Let's see. We're going to do our... we'll do our fourth snack clue in just a second for ehvending.com. In fact, I'll just I'll start the bed right now, but I will before we actually get to the clue itself, I mentioned, and it all ties together here in just a second, I mentioned that I was going to talk about a kitchen appliance we've got, and there was something interesting about it. Have you taken a good long look at the toaster that we've got in the kitchen?
Oh, I've used the toaster.
But, I mean, have you really looked at it, though? I'm not saying have you used it. I mean, it's a functional utilitarian device, but have you really stopped to take in the toaster and its aesthetic?
Possibly not
okay.
to the degree that you have, I guess.
Here's the thing. I know that you haven't because you would have mentioned what I noticed yesterday. And I, to be fair, I just noticed it. We've been here for what seems like a tedious eternity. 7 months, something like that. And I just saw this yesterday, and I think it's been there the entire time. Are you aware that the toaster in the kitchen here at the Emerson News Network, are you aware that the toaster has on it a Pop-Tart setting?
No.
That's the only set. It's right where you turn like light to dark, the uh-huh. toaster knob. There's only three settings on the toaster knob. There's light, dark. Actually, it's not true. There's light, there's dark. There's a thing I've never seen before, which is great, where if you turn it all the way back, it's cancel, which I think actually is like how you used to just go and pull the switch up manually to eject the bread. There's light, dark, cancel. Halfway between light and dark on the sort of cooking knob on the side of the toaster, it just says Pop-Tarts, and it says it in the Pop-Tarts font.
Wow! No, I never looked at that.
How did neither of us notice it? I had never seen that until yesterday, and I was actually making a bagel, one of the bagels you had brought in, and for a minute I couldn't tell what it said, and I thought it was just like schmutz or something on it, and I was like, oh, somebody's got some, and I leaned down and I went, oh, what the hell? And I have no idea why. Like, you want to talk about, I mean, I'm sure the money changed hands somewhere for that. I'm like, somebody got paid something to put Pop-Tarts on the side of the toaster. But, I mean, what a strangely specific sort of the marketing approach.
Yeah.
It made no sense at all. And you maybe wonder, like, is that a thing that they just did once? Did they do that why don't they do that on microwaves? It seems like that's a thing you could probably sell some space on the front of your microwave. Is it Orville Redenbacher? You know, instead of popcorn or something.
Yeah.
Seems like there's money to be made there.
The problem with that, of course, is that, like, that toaster, like many toasters, it's already, like, wearing out.
Yeah.
So you have to turn it way up to get, like, a nice brown on your bagels. You have to turn it way higher than seems logical. So I'm sure the Pop-Tarts setting is not actually accurate anymore.
No, but it's all about just putting the name Pop-Tarts in front of you.
Yeah.
So you see it every morning and suddenly you go, I'm craving Pop-Tarts. I don't know why. I mean, for all I know, it might just be a form of quasi-subliminal advertising where you're supposed to not even really be aware of it, but then just find yourself, you know, hewing toward that side of the aisle when you're doing your shopping.
I thought about buying Pop-Tarts at the convenience store this morning because they sell those little packages that just have two Pop-Tarts. It's like 79 cents,
yep.
and you get them at the convenience store. And then I just really wasn't in the mood, and I forgot that we actually have I always forget we have the toaster. And I could have toasted them.
Yes, you could.
Well, because I do like a raw, they're not really raw, but I do like the untoasted Pop-Tarts.
I was about to say, I used to work with a woman named Lori years and years and years ago. By the way, her on-air name, I swear to God, her name is Lori something or other. She referred to herself on the air as, what did she call herself? She called herself the Unholy Queen of Metal. There you go. That's radio for you right there. This was in her defense and mine, I suppose, and in the world's defense, like 20 years ago or something. But she actually would refer to eating her Pop-Tarts raw, and I hated that. I hated that phrase, and I was about to actually say, as long as you don't refer to eating them raw, and then I'll be goddamned if you didn't just open your mouth and say that.
But it's one of those things that isn't.
It's a horrible phrase for some reason.
It's not accurate. And it's not accurate. They're not raw.
What kind were you going to get?
I tend to like the fruit ones, so it would have probably
strawberry
might have
frosted.
Been cherry.
Cherry.
I really like the cherry ones. There's also I've never had one of these toasted, but there is now a an apple strudel flavored Pop-Tart.
Oh, I've had it,
which is very good.
Yes, it is.
And I'd like to try one of those toasted. I've never had them out of the toaster.
I've had all the flavors, even the ones I know I don't like. I love Pop-Tarts. I love Pop-Tarts like nobody's business. I've even flavors that I was certain to loathe. You know what I had just a few weeks ago at the same Plaid Pantry, and you know that those are just there. You're not going to toast those. Nobody's under any illusion that those are going to be toasted. When you buy two Pop-Tarts at a Plaid Pantry, you're going to eat those as you're on the way to the... You won't even be done with your register.
No.
You know, be like, $1.99, great. You should be opening the foil.
Actually, I think across the board, there was some kind of a collusion among convenience stores where they... Honestly, they lowered the prices on them. They're pretty much 79 cents everywhere now, which is almost, you know... irresistible.
It's almost like they're paying you, Don. It's like you can't afford not to buy them. The more you buy, the more you save.
Pop-Tarts are Eric D. Snyder's go-to movie snack.
Really?
By the way. Yes, he will bring a little package of Pop-Tarts with him to the movie, and about halfway through a movie, I will hear the rustle next to me, and he will be opening his Pop Tarts.
And they make it very, that paper doesn't really work, because they make a distinctive sound. It's not just foil. It's a specific kind. I could probably pick the Pop Tarts foil sound out of a lineup, orally speaking, just because it is very, it's unique.
It's somewhere between an aluminum foil and cellophane.
Yes,
it's a very, very, very thin foil.
They are the perfect snack in many ways. By the way, this whole discussion of Pop Tarts, which is making me crave them just like a bastard, brought to you by ehvending.com. You know, and here's the thing, you know, and they'll put Pop Tarts in your vending machine because they had them at CBS, because I would eat them like the big fat ass that I was. I would just sit there and so filled with loathing, you know, just shoving them in and crying. I look so fat on TV. You can find out more about, Pop-Tarts, but also vending and EH vending. EHVending.com, or you can call Josh at 360-816-1853. Do it right now. Pick up the phone. I'm going to wait for you right now. I can wait all day.
Are they doing it?
No, not yet. No, I'm not talking to you. No, you. No, you to the left. That's right, you. You are the one who runs the business, the one who makes the decisions there. The guy behind the guy. All right. You got the phone? All right. Now you look at it, your vending machine. Take it in. Assess it. Realize it's been there forever. Same old-ass candy inside. Probably paying too much. Probably not getting your money's worth. Employees probably plotting some sort of a coup of some kind, some sort of an overthrow. You don't want that to happen, do you? No, you do not. Here's how you solve that problem. You forestall that event by turning your phone over. You call this number, 360-816. And don't give me that you're not in Vancouver, Jazz, because you're on a cell phone. It doesn't matter. It's the same. You call Belize. It doesn't matter. 360-816-1853. 360-816-1853. I'll let you get back to the call there because Josh and James at EH Vending are going to tell you how you can actually save money. And don't you want to save money? Here's the thing. Even if you don't own the business, let me just put it this way. Let me put it in terms you'll understand. If you save money on the vending machines, you know who's going to be impressed with that? The guy who decides whether or not you have a job in 6 months or whether you get a raise or a promotion. Whether, in fact, he has one of your enemies killed just as a sort of like a bonus, you know? You get to hear not a lot of lamentations, but I mean, some of them, just a few, just enough to like an attaboy, as they say. So you get all that by calling Josh at 360-816-1853, or you call ehvending.com. That's how you do that. We'll give clue number four in a second. We're not going to do that thing where we get distracted and forget to do it. Pop-Tarts, though, are the perfect snack because they're like a cookie, but they're like a candy bar. But they're sort of like, but they're frosted, but it's like they've also got fruit, but then sometimes they could have like a chocolate, but they're crisp, but they're kind of chewy. Mm-hmm. They're toastable, but they're also not, you could eat them without toasting them if you want. You got two, so you always feel like you can have an entire snack and then you have another one for later. Or if you really feel like you want to indulge, you can eat both of them if you want. Here's the other thing about Pop-Tarts. They're not so crisp that they're going to crumble and like leave crumbs all over your shirt because they're bendy. You know, if you eat them right out of the package, even not. You know, you eat them out of the toaster, they're bendy, a little hot. But here's the other thing about it. You can eat them in the car because they're firm. They're stable and they will stay together in your hand and they will stay sort of, they'll stay erect. They'll stay firm enough as you are holding them upward that you can eat them as you're driving. But here's the thing about it. Is that as firm as a Pop-Tart is, really as crisp as they can be on the outside, they're going to stay upright so you can eat it. You can angle it towards your mouth and be eating as you're merging into traffic. But it's not so crisp that if you jab yourself with it, you're going to put out an eye. Because the corners are sort of rounded. They're sort of blunted off at the corners. And the corners are really good.
They're also very inexpensive. They're quite affordable. And sometimes if you go someplace like Costco or a grocery outlet, they will have the giant, like, bonus extra bonanza size boxes of Pop-Tarts. And it'll cost like $3 or something. But you feel like you're rich.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have a zillion Pop-Tarts. You have so many Pop-Tarts, and it's cost you almost nothing.
I had the other day, I was mentioning that I've had flavors of Pop-Tarts that I don't even like, that I knew I wouldn't hate, that I knew I wouldn't like, I knew I would just despise them, but it's like, they're Pop-Tarts, I'm helpless against them. I had cookie dough Pop-Tarts, chocolate chip cookie dough Pop-Tarts, and they weren't very good, I knew they wouldn't be, but it's like I had to try them. It's like they had those pina colada Pop-Tarts
Like the s'mores Pop-Tarts, I thought I gotta give them a try, and I was like,
too much.
Nah.
Good idea, bad in execution. You know what is really good?
Brown sugar cinnamon. Yes.
Get out of my head. That's what I was just going to say. The brown
those
sugar cinnamon.
The best.
Man, that is where it's at right there. That's where I live. They are. That's where Rick Emerson resides, culinarily speaking. They're fantastic.
And you toast them in the toaster, and you run just the slightest risk of maybe burning your tongue on the molten hot sugar. But
doesn't matter.
But not really. They don't get quite so hot that you hurt yourself.
And
but,
even if you did. I mean, it's just, you know, and it's here. Do we all agree about this? Why are we doing this to ourselves? I have in front of me? Half a can of warm Vizo. That's it. Can we all agree that one of the greatest things in the entire world, and I'm including like the polio vaccine in this, and also and transubstantiation, brown sugar.
Well, yeah.
And also because, you know, here's the thing about that. It's the texture, especially if you get that baked or cooked or crisped brown sugar. You know what I had last night, Don? Mm. Not a Pop-Tart. I had the last of Mama's homemade apple crisp. And I'm not fooling when I say that. That is the thing. My mother actually. Yeah. So when Laura went to Kennewick, it was my mom. My mom had some. Well, let me just whip something up, and then made like the best thing Laura had ever had in her life. And I was like, "This is awesome. Where did you? You know, what is this?" And my mom did that whole thing of like, "Oh, that's just a dash of this and a toss of that and whatever and a sprig of something else." And so she and Laura, it was sort of a great moment. I wish I'd been there for it. She and Laura actually made the apple crisp together. It was like a whole like weird big chill thing where she was like showing my wife like how to cook something, or the two generations and one food and whatever. And then they brought it home, had the last of it last night, microwaved a little bit. You know, I didn't put it in the toaster oven, but I just microwaved it. The thing is, the brown sugar, though, unlike, let's say, a breadish topping, which gets soggy, brown sugar doesn't get soggy because it's like it's not bread. And so it just retains its crisp because it was cooked just enough that it caramelized just a little bit. So good. It's the best thing I've ever had. Mm. I have half a can of warm Vizo in front of me. That's it. And also, there's some ketchup in the refrigerator.
I have an open bag of Binny Oreos. That's the best I could do.
There's some loose Burger King fries in the bottom of that box over there.
And, of course, there's bags of snacks, but we can't touch those because those are prizes.
Thank you for helping me with the segue, Don. Here's clue number four for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest for this week. Clue number four. I should, by the way, give credit where credit is due. I don't come up with with these clues. Cheryl Kanakoa does that. Cheryl Kanakoa. Sorry.
Chief Kanakoa, as we call her.
We should totally call her Chief Kanakoa. I'm so tempted just to replace, like, to get a staff photo and to just put, like, a cartoon of, like, an Indian girl with a single feather or something. I'm sorry. I just one can't live an honest life if one filters oneself, Don. Today's clue, as brought to us by Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. This snack is both kosher and gluten-free. There you go. And here's the thing. It doesn't seem possible that something that's gluten-free could still be good. And yet, I'm telling you, it is. This snack, still tasty. So there you go. Today's clue. The snack is both kosher and gluten-free. All right. That is all ye know and all ye need know.
To the Emerson News Network.
Were you doing a... You were doing a thing there. You were humming along with the sugar bit. We have not done a single goddamn watch today, have we?
I did a taser watch, which wasn't even on the list.
Oh, you know, I didn't tell my I didn't tell this. I had sort of a sister story to your. What is your cat's name? Mr. Pixley or something?
Nemo.
I don't know.
Mr. Pixley?
I don't know why I decided your cat's name was Mr. Pixley. I don't even know where that came from, to be honest. I have no idea. I don't think I've ever heard the words Mr. and Pixley put back to back ever. That was when my brain coughed up.
My cat's name was Nemo.
It wasn't like Whizzle Teats or something?
No.
Okay.
And my previous cat's name was Jack. So, no, I don't give cats cute names.
Not Mr. Whizzle Teats.
Not Mr. Whizzle Teats. Not Fluffy Butterkins.
Okay. Jack.
Jack.
All right. Well, I have a story that sort of pairs with your unpleasant, not your unpleasant anus, but the unpleasant anus story coming from regarding your cat. I'll have to do it tomorrow. I don't have time to do it today, probably. Yeah, we've done the Pop-Tarts thing. We've done the Harry Potter your mama joke. Let's see. What else do we have here? I had one other thing I was going to do. Oh, you said something at the beginning of the show today, right as I think we were getting ready to go on the air. You said that pie is the new cupcake. Is that in fact true, or is that just a thing you're saying?
No, I think that's at least that's the way that
that how the media are positioning it?
The foodinistas are trying to kind of push it. They're, yes, that cupcakes are on the way out, and now we're all into pie.
Okay.
We're all about pie.
I thought we were about pie, like, all along. But you're saying it's like the food at the top of the pyramid, the thing that we care about most of all.
Yeah, I guess now, yeah, we're
Are we going to pie shops then everywhere, like mini pies? And
yeah, probably we'll start seeing mini pies. I know that just pie in general is becoming hitting that trendy sort of aspect.
Is it because it's a comfort food?
I think so. It's also like ask the people at Wiffy's. It's something that basically once you master a crust— then you can change up your fillings all the time and then offer different things on a rotating basis.
What is your, at the risk of just becoming the Adam Carolla show here, what is your favorite pie?
I'm really not sure.
Really?
I'm more of a cake person than a pie person.
Get out.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I am. I'm more of a cake person than a pie person. I mean, I do like pie. I enjoy pie.
What is it you prefer about cake? Now, we are the Adam Carolla show, but what is it you prefer about cake to pie?
I really don't know. It's
Is it a texture thing, the squishiness?
I think it's more psychological than anything else. I think that just some people prefer cake and some people prefer pie, and I'm somebody that prefers cake usually.
Okay, then.
I'm really not sure why. But yeah, no, I like cherry pie. I like your berry pies if there is a nice ice cream to accompany it. You know.
Okay.
I actually do. The thing is, if it's like some kind of dessert, I like it.
No, I understand.
I like all desserts. You know what I love? I like coconut cream pie.
Okay,
that's my favorite pie.
All right. Are you just now? Is that true? Or are you just saying that to question go away?
No, that really is true because I had to think about like if I go to a pie place, which I don't really do very often. But several months ago, I was early for an appointment and I was near Banning's Pie Shop, mm-hmm. so I stopped into Banning's Pie Shop and I had a cup of coffee and pie. And when I had the option to choose any pie that I wanted, I had the coconut cream because I like coconut cream pie.
Is it Banning's Pie Shop or Banning's Pie House?
It might be Pie House.
I like to think that it's Pie House. I've been there. That's a great place. It's sort of like just like a sizzler, but they got a lot of pie. Mm-hmm. And I just love the idea of there being a pie house somewhere. You don't really have a cake house. That's the other thing.
No.
Although there is that place. Have you been to that place on the place in Selwood that's just called Cake, Cake, Cake?
No.
I swear to God. You know what they have?
Well, there's this place called A Piece of Cake.
No.
That's by the Aladdin Theater that has great cake.
Well, are we talking about the sign out front just says Cake, 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 and I think with exclamation marks.
It might be the same place or it might be different. Is this like just a block away from the Aladdin?
Maybe it's like it's by that Mike's Drive-In. Oh, God, we've just become small-town mouth breathers.
Okay. Yeah. I think they're two different cake places.
It's by my old shrink's office, if that helps you at all. It probably doesn't.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, okay. All right. You want to hear – let me just do this. We'll do a – and then we'll go to the news desk, and then we'll get a watch, John, and then we'll just go home and think about what we've done today. Let me just do one more.
After you jump my car.
Sorry, Don. I couldn't hear you over the Harry Potter music. Taylor.
Yes?
Your mama's so ugly. My Patronus is a paper bag. Oh, yeah. There you go. All right. Here's Don Taylor, kids.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Clergy Watch.
Here's your Clergy Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Well, I guess it would be nice. I gotta have faith. Oh, I gotta have faith.
Here's Don Taylor with your Clergy Watch for Thursday.
Ted Haggard, the former evangelical pastor who was ousted from the megachurch he founded after it was revealed that his extracurricular activities included crystal meth and mutual masturbation with men.
I am megachurch.
Confesses that he's probably bisexual.
Really? Bisexual. So he's halfway there. He's almost at the point of acknowledging his own inner desires, so it seems to me.
In an interview with GQ, Haggard remarked, I think that probably if I were 21 in this society, I would identify myself as bisexual.
Here's the thing about that guy. First of all, he's a good-looking man. I got to say this. He's an attractive man. I can see that this is going to work out well for him one way or the other. Because I would imagine Now, he's however old. He's not 21, obviously. He's in his 50s, I would imagine. Maybe his late 40s. But he's, you know, he's not ancient, but he's not a young man. I would imagine, this is just my speculation. I don't really know. But I would guess that probably nobody has more sex than a recently uncloseted gay man. That would just be my... I think you could be let out of a convent and you probably wouldn't go get your like sex on as much as that guy probably will. Because, you know, because you figure that's a thing where you, I mean, like, you know, you talk to some guys, it's like, everybody has worked with a guy like this, by the way. Everybody has worked with a guy. You ever work with a guy? And maybe not because you're a woman. And so maybe it was a little, maybe this, you were shielded this horror. Do you ever work with a guy who felt compelled to talk about how long it had been since he'd gotten laid?
Oh, yeah.
And how you been? Well, I'd be a lot better if I could get laid. I mean, it's been almost a week. Hey, now. You know, and you're just going like, why did I speak to you? Why did I even leave home and come to work today? But, you know, you guys are just like get all like wonky, you know, or whatever. They get to, you know, if it's just been too long since I've had any loving, you know, where they get all weird about it. Imagine though, you're this guy, you've identified, or at least your body has been wired. Let's take him in his word and say that he's not even gay. Let's just say he's bisexual. Your body has been wired to be that way since you're, let's say, 16. Make him a late bloomer. Since you're 16, your brain has been like trying to get you to do this thing. You know, it's like you're driving on the road and there's the, you know. You know, you've got the whatever, the grooves in the road, and the car keeps trying to go, and you're going, no, car, stay out of those grooves, even though they're sexy. You just spend like 40 years trying not to do that. That seems like that's a lot of release.
Yes.
That's going to require. Yeah. So I would imagine that's just going to be a... I would invest in some sort of lubricating agent, you know, beyond what you would normally use, because I think chafing is going to be a serious issue in the future.
Well, after resigning from the New Life Church, which he calls his old Soviet Union, Haggard reconciled with his wife and founded a new church last June, which he says welcomes everyone, gay, straight, bi, tall, short, whether you're an addict, a recovering addict, or you have an addict in your family. Apparently, it sounds like you have to basically be an addict to join his church. Using the interview to set the record straight, Haggard told Kevin Roos of GQ that despite supporting bans on gay marriage, he wasn't a homophobe, and he emphasized that he never had sex with Mike Jones, the former escort and meth dealer who outed him.
Okay.
But he does say that he thinks he's probably bisexual.
Well, you know, at a certain point, you just got to like, you know, you get those, you get, and I keep saying guys, but you know, you get people who just have some, and it's not my place to judge, but I will assess that you get guys who do just seem to have some strange blind spot for, not even guys who are like in the closet, but it's like his whole thing of like, I'm bisexual, but I never had relations, as though we're supposed to believe.
Yeah. But I'm still denying ever having done anything.
With a drug dealer.
Yeah.
I mean, which means that you, by the way, are a drug user. And so if a drug user and a drug dealer are in the same room, and let's say, you know, this guy is closeted, so his opportunities for sexual contact, I would imagine, are minute and finite, you're probably going to take – that's like an any port in a storm kind of a thing. So – the only conclusion you could come to is that the drug dealer had a lot of self-control and, you know, and decided that it would be morally wrong to get it on with this guy, which I think doesn't really ring true. Mm. So it's strange that he would come this far and yet just like dig in his heels about the, you know, the whatever. So,
well, as one member, former member of New Life Church told the GQ journalist, he said, I think Ted genuinely loves God, and I think he has a sincere interest in helping people, but I don't believe a word that comes out of his mouth.
Yeah. No, I can see why that would be the case. So, all right. Yeah. Well, there you go. There's the Clergy Watch for, let's see, Thursday right here in the Rick Emerson Radio program. Because I got to have faith. I don't know what happened there. Hold on. Jesus, everything just, it all just went quiet for all of a sudden. I have no, it just ended. Let me try that again. Because I got to have faith. By the way, somebody says Gresham also has a great classic car parade where Hicks do burnouts in Camaros to the hoots and hollers of Gresham townsfolk. You should go there and go all Anchorman on them. I do like the idea of Greg Nibbler just like elbowing a guy in the throat. just out of my way! That's fantastic. You know who I am?
Tell me about your Hemi. And just thrusting a microphone at the guy's face.
Okay. And so forth. Here's Don
Taylor. Do you want to just jump directly into the penis watch?
We should...
Or do you want to buffer it with something?
We should do the Geek Watch here in a second. We should do the Geek Watch that we were discussing. By the way, before we do that, I'm going to have you walk over here for a second and look at something. I mentioned it yesterday that Cheryl has discovered all these disturbing emoticons on Skype because they're all disturbing. So I'm going to minimize something and then I'm going to bring it up. Okay. So after I said the thing about like depicting her as a little Indian girl with a feather on her head, So she typed "Don't you dare" and then followed it with yet another creepy Skype emoticon.
Okay. Shaking its head no and foaming at the mouth.
I think its mouth is gagged or bandaged in some way. So it and its eyes are wide with fear. So it's an emoticon. It's like a 3D sort of, you know, like a it's smiley face, but the smiley face has been bandaged. Its mouth is bandaged closed. It's shaking its head and its eyes appear to be sort of very very wide. So
that's the emoticon you use if someone has kidnapped you and duct tape you to a chair in their basement.
I was going
to
say that's right as Mr. White is beginning to search for, you know, the better song to listen to.
Although odds are good they're not going to give you access to Skype if that's the case.
I swear to God, and now it's just an emoticon of a hugging teddy bear whose ears are wiggling. Okay, just look, I'm just between you and I'm just going to reduce this for a little bit. All right, quit sending me emoticons of cake. God. All right, it is the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is your Geek Watch for Thursday.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show, that's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is Don Taylor with your Geek Watch.
Two old games from the past, Oregon Trail and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, are coming to Facebook. According to a blog post by Blue Fang Games analyst Darius Kazemi, the two games will be available in early February. Oregon Trail is launching February 2nd and Carmen Sandiego on February 9th. Blue Fang Games will be developing the titles, and The Learning Company is publishing them.
Now, have I said this before, or is this just a thing I thought in my head? I don't know why somebody... And really, we should just step up and do it ourselves. I don't know why somebody hasn't done an Oregon Trail reality show.
Yeah, you have mentioned that before.
And yet it doesn't exist.
No.
Do I need to say it a third time? Is that the thing? I mean, why does it – that would – it's the ultimate high concept, right? I mean, it's like it's Oregon Trail the game, the show. Bam, done.
And Discovery Channel has done those people living in the pioneer houses and stuff like that.
They did some Lewis and Clark thing. But they did, you know, people were like, people are replicating part of the Lewis and Clark, journey. And they'll do like a lot of specials on the Oregon Trail where it's like, you know, a guy will like, we're going to camp out where they, we'll see what they saw. But it's always just like one particular site or it's one, you know, they don't actually get any sort of breadth to the experience. It seemed, and that game has such cultural currency.
I thought the Oregon Trail game was on Facebook a few years ago because when I first got on Facebook, you could play Oregon Trail.
I believe that – now, could you play it or was it a thing that they were talking about it, be preparing to come to Facebook?
No, I played it. In fact, I had never played it as a child or as a youth, and so it was all new to me. And I was – And people would laugh at me because I'd go, yeah, I tried to do it and I kept dying of dysentery. Everybody dies of dysentery.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
Maybe it's – well, maybe it was not a licensed version. It could have been like a bootleg sort of a – because, you know, we played this, I think – actually, we played this the first day that Patrick was in the hospital because we did sort of an ad hoc – I kind of did a hosted best of thing and I played just some stuff in the archives. And one of the things I played was the interview with Don Rawich, who was the guy who co-wrote – he co-created the game. And I said, it's like 30 years later. I said, did you have any idea that Oregon Trail was still huge? And he said that he went through this sort of, it was sort of a bell curve, that it was really big when it came out. And then he just was busy doing other things and wasn't really paying attention to Oregon Trail or to thinking about it. He's like, it's a game I did 30 years ago for the Apple IIc or whatever. And he did not know until his daughter is a school teacher. And I think his daughter said that, like, her students who were, like, 13 or something, kept talking about it. And they kept referencing it because it was a thing that had started to pop up on the internet first as like a meme, I think. And then the game itself started to spread online because it's such a small game. You can basically email it to somebody. And he, I think maybe the upshot was that it is sort of, it had never gone public domain, but because it just, they'd forgotten about it, I think that just sort of like bootlegs of it started to pop up. Because again, it's like, how hard is it to replicate Oregon Trail? So this might be the first sanctioned, licensed version of it. That seems like it would make... Did you see that? Did you see the faux trailer that somebody made for an Oregon Trail movie? How great was that?
That was great.
That was wonderful. I think that's a thing that actually could be brought back in the classic version. But I think that's a game that they could also update, and it would probably not suck. That's a game they could probably update, and it would be pretty great if they did it the right way, if they didn't make it all corny. Because sometimes they update games, like classic games, and you're just like, this is crap. Like, why did you – like, I remember like, playing – God damn, this is forever ago now, but in, like, in the 90s, playing, like, some updated version of Pitfall, and just saying, like, why? What is the point of this? It is, again, like, you could be playing – it's like when you've seen Peter Jackson's King Kong, where you're like, I guess – but I mean, you could have made something new with the same money. Why does this exist? And that was the thing.
Well,
it's
like
Pitfall.
They did that with Zork. Zork started out as a text only game. Well, and the first few versions of Zork were text only games, and then of course, well, let's take advantage of all of these fancy graphics that are available and made it one of those games where basically you just run a cursor over the screen and then click on whatever lights up, and it was kind of like, well, that's just taking all of the thinking out of it. Kind of the joy of games like Zork, where you read the stuff, you had to make your own maps, and you had to actually think about stuff, and you had to solve the puzzles. You know, if you're just playing something that you just click on crap because it lights up, there's no thinking involved.
Well, then
in
you're
that.
Just playing Dragon's Lair, and that's just pointless. Zork. My wildest imaginings, I did not think we would have a Zork reference today. So well done.
I loved the text-based games. I miss the text-based games. Wishbringer was another really good one. Zork. Was it Planetfall? Was that what it was called? But I mean, there were a number of them, and they were really fun.
I remember playing the Monty Python and the Holy Grail text game, which was like maddening. I mean, it was because imagine trying to play a Monty Python movie. I mean, it's where like nothing makes sense. It was a little bit like Starship Titanic, actually, where you would play, and it was just like you were in some weird, crazy house cubist world of Douglas Adams' own skewed imagination, where you couldn't logically guess anything except in the most circuitous fashion.
Now, are you talking about Monty Python? Or are you talking about The Hitchhiker's Guide?
No. I'm talking about the Monty. There was a Holy Grail.
Because you said Douglas Adams.
Right. Well, because he made Starship Titanic.
Oh, that's right.
So yeah, Holy Grail. I played Monty Python, but there was a Holy Grail text game, which the only thing I could compare it to is Starship Titanic, which is the Douglas Adams joint. And it's like, and they're both the same way, where it's like there's a sort of internal logic, but only if you are thinking like Douglas Adams, which, you know, no one can do.
Well, before that, he had actually written the Hitchhiker's Guide game.
I didn't know that there was an actual text game.
It was.
Game for
it
that.
Was a text game for Hitchhiker's Guide, and it was really frustrating because a lot of it was really hard. There was one whole scenario that my roommates and I, all working together, it took us, I think, a month to solve, and it was where you were in a room with a drain in the floor and trying to get the babelfish out of, you know, out of a vending machine, and it would fly across the room and go down the drain.
Right.
And you try to cover the drain with the robe that was on a hook, but then a robot would come and it would take. And so you had to get everything exactly the right, you know. And it took like a month to figure out what the exact combination.
Because you couldn't
of things.
Go online and just ask somebody. What's the cheat code for? Yeah.
No, back then you had to buy a book, and it had a highlighter pen that you would highlight stuff if you wanted to see the cheap thing. And then we weren't using that. And anyway, we played the entire game through. And when you finally got to the end of the Hitchhiker's Guide game, it turned out you were like really tiny, a tiny little minuscule thing. And there was the fish or whatever, the turtle that was flying through the space, and it would eat you. And the thing was, at the very beginning of the game, when you're Arthur Dent and you're leaving your house, you walk to a pub and there's a dog barking at you. If you have bought a sandwich at the pub and fed it to the dog will not be hungry. And therefore, at the very end of the game, after you've spent months playing this thing and got all day, if you have did not feed a sandwich to the dog at the beginning of the game, the dog will eat you and you lose.
See, which is the sort of thing that you would be pissed off about if it were anybody but Douglas Adams.
Yeah.
And even then, you're probably still pissed off a little bit. But at the same time, you have to go, like, that's awesome.
Yeah, because there's nothing you could do about it at that point, because it was
way at the start.
Yeah. And that's an especially, and I do believe that, and that's an especially inside Hitchhiker's Guide reference too, because there's this moment in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in the first book where Arthur Dent says, "I seem to be having tremendous difficulty with my life." And then those words drift through a portal in the space-time continuum, and they fall like through the endless void and reaches of space. And they land on a planet where at that very moment two great and terrible armies are poised to do battle with one another. And it's like the two two envoys or whatever, you know, the one from each side are meeting in the middle to try to avoid war, and one challenges the other to take back something that it said about the other one's mother. And, you know, and like death ships are ready to unleash hell at a moment, and they're trying to avoid the conflict. And at that moment, Arthur Dent's voice saying, "I seem to be having tremendous difficulty with my life," fills the air, which, of course, like in the Golga Frincham tongue or whatever, is the most dreadful and vile insult imaginable. So they have no choice but to wage dreadful and terrible war for centuries. I realize now that I can just do large sections of this from memory, which is stupid. Eventually, the source of the misunderstanding, the offending universe being our own, was discovered, and they settled their few remaining differences, and they decided to wage war on our own universe. For vast eons, they screeched across the seeming endless void of space, descending upon our own planet with guns blazing, only where, because of a terrible miscalculation in terms of spatial relation and size, the entire invading party was accidentally swallowed by a small dog.
Exactly.
And so then that he Fs you with that at the end of the game, mm-hmm, is like the sort of connecting of the dots that only a truly cracked and brilliant person would ever come up with. Wow. That's just – can I – this is – and like as we always do when we talk about Douglas Adams, I have to say that I just – really, I think if I could go back – if I could go back and I think and sort of – without any of the unpleasant sort of – monkey's paw aspects to it. If I could resurrect somebody, I think it would be Douglas Adams. Because just for like a day, just to be like, look at this cool planet we're on now. It's an iPad. Look, you know, just to show him like your Android phone and go like, it's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That is the thing I wish he could see, that the Hitchhiker's Guide like exists.
I know. I mentioned this before. A couple of years before he died, though, I went to Macworld, and they were talking about how there was going to be a big super surprise guest for the keynote address at the beginning of Macworld, and everyone was assuming it was going to be like Steve Jobs or something, and it was Douglas Adams, and the entire like double opened up ballroom at the San Francisco Expo Center.
So lost their minds,
and he was just so delightful. He was because he was quite the Mac event.
Oh yeah. He preached about that for years and years and years. And I think we've talked about Stephen Fry actually wrote. Stephen Fry wrote a review of the iPad when it first came out, and he and Adams were really good friends. And he made the same. He actually referenced Douglas Adams throughout the piece, and he had the same sort of lament that he rued that of all the devices that have existed thus far, the iPhone, the Newton, the very small portable laptop, the whatever. He said that more than anything in his life, he had wished that Douglas Adams had lived to see the iPad, because he felt that it was the truest representation yet of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy made real. Which is just, you know, talk about a guy who was just so phenomenally ahead of his time and who just imagined things. You know, and not just in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but I mean, who wrote about science and evolution and and natural theory a lot. I mean, he's like a Bill Bryson guy, you know, in many ways. It's funny because you're reading that Bill Bryson book, and I'm actually reading two things right now. I'm reading The Book Thief, which is fiction and great, but you can just sense the depression on the horizon.
Yeah, when you were saying you don't like books that are like kind of a downer, I was like, oh, I can't believe
it. Here's this Holocaust novel.
He's reading The Book Thief.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it starts with like, I'm the angel of death. Let me tell you about a Jewish girl I know in 1941. You go, nah. But so I'm sort of multitasking. I'm juggling that with I am rereading Last Chance to See, which is the book that Douglas Adams did. It is his favorite book, but where he traveled around the world to see various species that were on the brink of extinction and to visit them in their native environment. And it's just – and he just has a way of taking science and making it so – not dumbing it down, but just making it so easily explainable, and the way that Bill Bryson does, where you still get a sense of the vastness of science, but you at least get a grasp of how it kind of works. And I mean, he was just, yeah, just freaking awesome is what he was. So, all right, well, there you go. And oxen and so forth. There you go. There should be one.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh.
loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
I don't even like to open the Skype thing now because now it's just nothing but strange emoticons that are like spraying blood. All right. Well, we should probably end today's show because Greg and Sarah got to get back here at some point and do the thing. Have we done everything we need to do? We teased some stuff we didn't get to. But
yeah, but, you know, we're good.
All right. Well, tomorrow I'll tell this animal thing. And I'll play this I'll play you this audio and this video too of this DJ. It's just phenomenally bad. It's like so wonderfully bad that it just gives me small trills of horrible pleasure to think about it. So we'll get to that after a small musical interlude, ladies and gentlefolk. You're going to hear an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Don't forget, coming up later on today at funemploymentradio.com, you get to hear Greg and Sarah X Dillon. So we'll be doing their show, and you can be watching trailblazers.tv for their Blazers-oriented TV program, which is going to be airing on that web portal very soon. So be watching that. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Big Jim Willig. He's going to be here with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 tomorrow, talking about the life and work of Mr. Drew Carey, also our good friend Joe Squires. I'll be sitting in the studio tomorrow. And I had something else, but it's escaping me now. Oh, we'll do clue number 5 for the EH vending contest. So that is coming up tomorrow as well. We want to thank our guests today, including Sarah X Dillon and Greg Nibbler. Did we talk to anybody else today? Eric Snyder? No. Maybe tomorrow? We'll see. So, all right.
And Ralph Johnson didn't call.
No. Well, you know, but again, he's a guy that obviously has a lot of plates spinning in his life at any one moment. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology manager provided by Mr. Thomas Keel, executive producer Bruce Egler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanekoa, so forth. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. So thank you for listening. And remember to spread the word, won't you, please? It is Thursday, January 27th, 2011, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.